Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Hey, David.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
I just want to say I'm excited to be the first guest to ever record their own intro.
How about
very
that?
Very big.
Breaking
wow.
ground yeah. there. Do you guys have flex bombs? Can we drop some of those?
Oh, my God. David, how was your week?
My week was, you know, honestly, it was another great week for David Cho.
Did you do anything for Passover?
Yeah. Shag Shemesh.
We went down to Aunt Marge's and... Aunt Marge is seeing this dude who
is Aunt Marge out here in these streets?
Well,
if we have any listeners of this podcast who have seen her on Bumble or Plenty of Fish,
this is why people have listened. This is why people are listening to the podcast, to listen about your old Jewish aunt on social.
Whoa,
media.
Old?
Yeah, come on, she's not that old.
I mean, we're old. I'm assuming she's older than us.
She is, but she's seeing this dude who has these vocal tics.
Yeah.
Right?
And so every time that he opens or closes a sentence, it's with...
Like Uzi Vert?
Sort of. But he'll...
Yeah.
Honestly, not far off.
Yeah. He goes, sure.
So he ruins Bad and Bougie?
Yeah. But the best was that, like, we caught on, right? Dan, Jeff, and myself caught on. And then Dan got stuck in a conversation with this guy.
That's but Dan started doing it back to him.
Right. And he didn't like, take it anyway or realize
so
it.
So Dan was doing, like, the sure to him.
Which is great. Dope. So that made it
love these Passover, Passover bits tradition. To start with. No, this is, in case anyone's wondering, this is what the podcast is like. It's us talking about really random shit.
Jeff, who do we have on the podcast today?
We have our good friend David Cho.
David, I've already been talking, guys. Come on.
David, where do we know you from?
Oh, I don't know. The internet.
How about this? David was one of the first employees at College Humor. David was a co-creator of The All. David was the publisher at Grantland, internet favorite Grantland.
Award-nominated Grantland.
By what? The Webbies?
No, the Asmys.
The Webbies. Oh.
I have a Webby right there. A Webby winning.
Yeah.
Like, award winning and nominated.
That's
what
right.
was
your six-word speech?
Nice.
And now David's in the advertising, marketing, I don't know, like
don't
cool
even...
people realm?
I think there's a convergence of content and marketing and advertising.
Save it for the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
And this is a really great episode. We have a lot of fun. David, by the way, is internet famous. We get into that.
That's not true.
Yeah.
No,
we talk
well,
about
no,
that.
Well, no, you've done things that are internet famous.
Yeah. I'm definitely... I don't have a K
you
in my...
Or not. Yeah.
I don't have a K in my follower account.
Oh, right. We talk about that as well.
Yeah.
Should we wrap up this intro?
I think so. I just would like to say, beyond following us on all the social media accounts that we have, please go to Spotify right now and follow It's The Real. David,
I did it today.
Thank you. Thank you, David Cho.
Wait, real quick before we start, though, can we talk about how Jeff in last week's intro said he was going to stab the person who has the It's The Real
Snapchat
in the neck? And you guys just like went by it as though no one said anything? As though it was normal for Jeff to be threatening to stab people in the neck? Jeez Louise, Jeff, relax.
I have a real dark side.
Yeah, cool. So let's get in the show.
Yo, what up, it's Eric, a.k.a. Norwegian Air, a.k.a. Finna Land.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. 500 Horses, a.k.a. My Little Pony Collection.
Hello, this is David Cho. I have no AKAs.
None?
Well, I mean,
had so much time to
no,
think about
well,
it.
Yeah, I mean, so I wrote an AKA one time, it was horrible, but then Jeff used part of it in an old episode.
What
did it was a.k.a. Real player,
no,
aka.
Did you use it?
That's the only one I could come up with.
So. That's a good aka.
For Eric.
That's right.
I love streaming music. So.
David, this is a waste of time with It's The Real.
I don't know how many It's The Real heads are out there. Probably a lot, but it's so weird to hear it without the music in the background. It's much more uncomfortable, and the responses people have now, it makes so much more sense.
You understand what goes on.
Do you want to sing the song?
I don't. That was me singing like Aziz.
David, thanks for finally being on the podcast.
No,
like, not only did we want to have you on for the longest time, not only have you wanted to be on for the longest time, but the greatest thing is the following that you have online who wants you to be here.
There's at least 9 people on the internet who have asked you when I'm going to be on this podcast.
And here we are.
Yeah, finally. Yeah. In my apartment, too. Is this the first apartment or
no, first remote? No, we had we went to Mac Miller's apartment.
Yes. So just me and Mac.
Well,
you and Mac. Yeah, two contemporaries.
And we went to the hotel for Mike Posner.
That's right.
Yeah, so yeah, me, Mac Miller, and Mike Posner.
You guys are all on the same level.
Three white dudes. Right.
How are you?
Fucking white dudes. I'm good. I'm tired.
Yeah, let's just get right into it.
What do you want to get into?
Well, you were in Los Angeles very recently.
Correct.
And we saw some video of you in the studio with Pharrell Williams, Timbaland, and Justin Timberlake, three
Correct.
Friends sitting on a couch in the studio.
Just, yeah, again, just me and my contemporaries, Mike Posner, Mac Mill, Tim, Pharrell. I've been working with Justin on something recently, which I'm like super NDA'd up, so I can't talk about anything, but I'm working with him, which is exciting because I'm just a fan. And I can tell you about that night, which is fucking crazy.
Well, real quick, did you have any apprehension about videoing or taking any pictures while you're around these guys?
Yeah, I was allowed to put that picture up because Justin and Pharrell put it up. So that was allowed. And then, I don't think I've put out anything else besides that. I think Tim put up a video.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the background.
I was in that one.
Yeah.
And then, but then otherwise, I mean, that's why I haven't put anything on the internet.
Was that the most interaction that you've gotten, like, online? Like, the biggest reaction you've gotten online?
No, I mean, because I've had minor memes go viral.
Bears dancing against trees.
Yeah, yeah. That has a million views on YouTube. This is not a joke. That has a million views on
Congratulations.
YouTube. Congratulations. Yeah. If you guys want to, I don't even know what the YouTube channel name is. Oh, if you go to Vidcho, VIDCHO.com, it redirects to my YouTube page. I mean, that was the thing that was the most important. That's one of the things that I think has been the most interesting things in my life that I've seen. Just because, like, I mean, you guys we're of a similar age. And, like, I mean, for me, as a Korean kid who grew up in Tennessee, it's like Pharrell, Kanye, that era of people has been so important in my life of, like, where I'm like, I love Tennessee. And, like, that's so much of me is part of that. But also, like, I always had interests that were outside of the things that were immediately available to me in a pre-internet time. So, like, I remember the first time I saw, like, Pharrell wearing Bape, and I was like, holy shit, like, this is something that I finally feels like it's a part of me. And, like, you know, you guys know I love Pharrell. The last podcast we did was about Kanye.
Yeah.
Like, you know, which is, like, how long? 8 years ago now.
I mean, it's a long time.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, we talked about them, but, like, so if you haven't heard that 8 years ago, a quick refresher course is that Kanye and Pharrell and these dudes who are sort of like these amalgamations of all these different cultures into one person. So, like, Kanye Wayne came out wearing blazers and the fucking Louis Vuitton backpack, or Pharrell being like this black guy who's very into skateboarding but also has like these Japanese influences. Like, that was like, I mean, I think there's a lot of kids of our generation who really relate to that. The idea of being, you know, and that's one of the things, like, I think lately I've had like this aversion to the word urban in the sense of like, as code for black or anything like that. Because I do think there is something to be said for people who live in urban areas or cities or aspire to live in those places, and how that's like a true definition of like our generation's urban, where it's like you're a person who is formed by all these different influences that I think are really, really interesting. And that, and to me, it's like being around Pharrell, who's sort of like one of the like OG like icons of that movement, I think is really, really interesting.
What was it like even meeting Pharrell?
Jeff asked that question, and I was like, Jeff, ask me about what it was like when I first met Pharrell.
Yeah, but did it sound natural when I said it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, because they couldn't see you, and you had a fucking glimmer in your eye. This wasn't the first time I met Pharrell.
Really?
Because I met him at the BBC opening.
Right, you interviewed him.
Time. Yeah, I interviewed him for Radar. I didn't even... Neil, my friend, interviewed him. Mm-hmm. I went with him. I asked questions and stood there like a fucking herb. And then I got a picture with him that my friend took on, like, I think a Razor phone.
Wait, what do you wear to the BBC opening?
I don't know. At the time, I was, like, fucking poor. I didn't have anything. So I just, like, wore normal shit. But who knows what I'd wear now.
Yeah,
no, but... Now that I have all this opulence,
that's
around,
right.
You know.
That's right.
So the first time at Pharrell, I just landed, and it was, I think, Pharrell's first day working with Justin in the studio in this round of whatever. And there's like a common area, there's like a kitchen, mm-hmm. and there are all these like little private rooms.
Was
off
there
of
like
it.
A mini fridge?
No, there's a full fridge.
Okay.
And so I was there, and I think I'd like set up in the kitchen because like all the mini rooms were kind of booked, and I was like just trying to catch up on email and stuff. And so I was working, and then Pharrell, his like sort of security guy slash like dude, Ben, and then family of
Whoa.
Formerly of Star Trek.
Yes. Sure.
I guess currently probably, who knows. But so they're coming in and they're talking about, this is like the week after the Mike Brown video had come out, the new one from the South By documentary.
Yeah.
And so Pharrell and Fam and Ben were just talking about like what that meant and all this stuff. And they're having like a very like, I mean, it's like just not heated, but it's like a very serious conversation about what it means to be black in America today and all this stuff. And I'm just like sitting there, and they're doing this in the kitchen while I'm there. And it's like, I'm like on my laptop, being like, holy shit, this is Pharrell. And it's like a very interesting and intelligent conversation. And then all of a sudden he turns to me, he's like, what do you think? And I was like, and then I just like said every word I could to also not be as inoffensive as possible, to be like, oh, you know. I obviously like I respect, and, you know. I was like, I think you're right, but I think Fam has a great point too, and you know. And he's just like, oh, that's cool. Like, oh, thank you. And then later on, and I hadn't been introduced to him at that point.
So
then,
as far as he knew, you could have just been like working at the studio.
No, because he knew, because you. I was in a section that was very clearly like I was at least part of like someone's squad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You weren't just like random fan who has stumbled.
Yeah,
into.
Yeah, I did. The security there is very intense. As you can
yeah,
imagine.
Ben, shouts to him.
Huh?
Shouts to Ben.
Do you guys know Ben?
No.
Ben is dope. Ben's literally like, I saw, I think BBC put up a picture of Pharrell from the Grindin' video shoot, and Ben's in the back, and I was like, oh, Ben. It's interesting how many people Pharrell has from his like past, like or like has kept the same dudes around him. Like his engineer, Drew, is this guy who has engineered everything he's ever done.
That's awesome.
And so I was just like, so do you have this on your computer? He's like, yeah. I was like, do you have this? He's like, yeah, I've got that. And it's like crazy. That's just sort of the first time I met him. And so then I met him afterwards, and someone was like, and Justin introduced me. He was like, oh, this is da da da. And he's like, oh yeah, we met. And just was being like, oh, this is sort of like, he's a smart guy. I was like, I can tell. And I was like, thank God.
So what's it like for you're a Korean kid?
I am Korean. I was not white. That was a joke. Sorry.
In Tennessee.
Yes.
And you love BBC and you love...
Not then. I didn't know what it was then. But
you
like,
didn't know any of that?
No, because I mean, it hadn't come out yet. Like, we went to college in like 2000. I went to college in 2001.
Right.
So I think that was like, I guess, BAPE sort of. But I mean, I still was like, you don't... I mean, people forget that like before the internet, there's like no way to find anything.
Well,
out.
Yeah. So like, where do you find Kanye and where do you find Pharrell?
I found Kanye... I was like late to Kanye probably. I got him... 2003. That's when Dropout came out. I think it was when Dropout came out. My roommate at the time was this like football player who's this like huge black dude from Durham, and we got placed together randomly when I got back from study abroad, and he was like, hey, you should listen to this. Or, you know, he wasn't even like that. He was like, he was listening to it in our room. I was like, what the fuck is that? That's dope. And then I got really into him, and then I like looked a lot of shit up online about him, and then I went to go see him at I saw a free concert that he did. I think we told this story in the last podcast. I went to see him for the first time at Duke University, where he was like doing this like free show. So it's like half kids from Duke who are, as you can imagine, fairly white and Asian,
right?
And then half the community of Durham, Raleigh Durham, which is like very like, I mean, black. Frankly,
right.
And it's like, and so you had that, and then opening up for him was John Legend, who no one knew at the time, and he fucking comes out, and he tries to play Ordinary People, and everyone just is sort of like legit booing him, being like, like they came to hear rap music, and not even like hard rap music necessarily,
right?
But
right.
This dude motherfucker's playing Ordinary People like on a piano, and like it's not even like a good piano, it's like a shitty electric piano, and it just sounds whatever.
Did you boo?
I didn't boo. I mean, I was just excited to see Kanye, but I mean, at the time, like, it's so crazy to think like he was doing these stages on schools on like a little stage they built for him.
Totally,
like no visuals, no anything, just like.
I mean, Eric saw him at
Asbury Park,
beautiful Asbury Park.
Also with John Legend opening and Don C as his DJ.
Oh
and,
God, Don was the DJ.
Don was the DJ. He was a DJ Offbeat. and Consequence, and their openers were Little Brother.
I love Consequence. He's a good rapper.
Prove it.
This is good. The reason I'm excited to be on this podcast right now is because I know Jeff well enough now where I will be the I confidently can say I will be the only person to ever be on this podcast that gets all of Jeff's bullshit jokes. Because I always listen to it. I'm like, there are these rappers that don't hear the, like hear Jeff say these random dry things. And they're like, is he serious? Is he not? They don't get that, like, you know, half of 80% of what Jeff says is,
and
like,
you always let me know.
Very sarcastic, dry things. Yeah, whenever I'm listening, I always like text you on our group thread. I'm like, oh, they didn't get this joke, Jeff.
Thank
so,
you.
So I'm excited to, you know, get all of them.
David, you've been to some of the greatest places on earth.
Get off my dick, Jeff. Where is this going? I'm curious.
You've been to Paris.
True.
You've been to Barcelona.
Are you just going off the Rihanna plane stops now?
No.
It's not an It's the Real podcast about Jeff bringing up the Rihanna plane. So glad we could get that off the, for those of you playing It's the Real bingo at home.
Take a shot.
We've mentioned Jeff's aunt and,
we don't talk about Aunt Marge every week.
The Rihanna plane.
Aunt Jones in the mix a lot.
Anyway.
Aunt Jane, yeah.
You went to probably the greatest place on earth. You went to Tyrese's house.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrese's house is really fucking
well,
dope.
How'd you get the invite?
So, honestly, I mean, I pretty much kind of snuck in because Aziz Ansari, the comedian, and his brother, Anis Ansari.
Friend to the podcast.
It's true. Other people you guys know who have been on the podcast before me. No, they had an ongoing text thread with The Lonely Island from SNL. And they've been talking about going to Gibbsyhanna, which is essentially Tyrese's private Benihana that he set up in his backyard that he talked about at some point, or he put on social media or whatever, right? So then Tyrese or Sandberg runs into Tyrese at an event and like runs
like the Emmys or something, right?
No, that one was, this is like 2 years ago.
So okay.
I think it was like, I think it might have, I don't remember, but so sometime before, like years ago, Sandberg runs up to Tyrese like, holy shit, like, you know, my friends and I, we talk about this thing that you have. And Tyrese is sort of like nonplussed and is sort of like, cool, I guess. Really? Yeah, hit me up. Or no, yeah, I think he offers to like, because Tyrese is incredibly nice and so chill or whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah, like hit me up whenever you want to go. But I don't think Sandberg felt like he had the juice to do it at the time.
Right.
So then I said, so at some point, like, I guess this was earlier, like last winter, Aziz runs up to Tyrese.
And Tyrese knows who Aziz is.
Yeah, at this point, I think Tyrese. It's post Master of None. Okay. And I think he might have been nominated
Tyrese
for the
Tyrese is a
Emmy.
Big Netflix head.
Listen, he loves the streaming services. Homes, don't lie. Yeah. So then Tyrese is like into it. And so then he puts on Instagram, yo, we're down to go. And then I saw that and I was like, yo, let me get, I'm not part of this tech server, but let me get on this trip. He's like, yeah, sure, of course. And so then it turns into this thing where we start texting for weeks and weeks, like when we can go. And like, I think all of us are sort of like, it's not going to happen. Like there's a million reasons why this can't happen.
Wait, name them all.
What? The reasons why it can't happen?
Yeah.
I'm going to ignore that joke from Jeff. But no, and then the day's there and he's like, yo, come through. I got everything set up. Don't worry about it. And we're all like, and it's like in the middle of like somewhere like towards Calabasas, but not Calabasas.
So we
like,
know.
So it's not in like LA proper.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know.
And like, the group that's LA. Going is Lonely Island, Aziz, Anis, and you.
Yeah, it's the six of us. And he was like, I think because he was like the table's tight, so he was like, no, just because it's like it's a single Benihana table, so it's like I think there's like eight seats or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can only fit a certain number of people. And so we get there, and I think the entire time we're all sort of like, what the fuck is about to happen? and they brought like this bottle of tequila, and we brought a bunch of wine and shit.
Can you get a real Benihana? Can you bring your own booze?
No, of course not. It's not BYOB. But Gibbsyhanna is. So we get there, and it's just like weird because you walk into his house, and he's just so nice, but none of us have, I guess Andy and Aziz had met Tyrese, but like none of us like friends with Tyrese.
Right. So what is his function during this? I mean, like, is
host.
He...
I mean, he's just the consummate host. He's the nicest guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, got the most like happy disposition, and he's just like, welcome, blah blah blah. I think like Roxy from
106 and Park,
yeah, was there because I think she's friends with Tyrese, and then another one of their mutual friends was
table
there.
Table is tight.
Yeah, were you mad that they were there?
No,
were you like,
great.
Oh great,
No, I'm a huge 106 and Park fan.
Wait. So it's like a regular Benihana where you're seated around the actual, like, chef.
Yeah, and so the chef, his name is Oliver, is Tyrese's personal chef who he stole from a Benihana, but I think he also cooks for Tyrese non-Benihana foods.
Mm-hmm.
And Oliver also is a DJ. So we get there, and Tyrese shows us around. He's like, yo, this is my house, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, just, like, he does an episode of Cribs for us. And so the house is, like, beautiful. It's, like, but then you get to the outside, and it's, like, fucking everything's there. There's, like, a little Starbucks setup where it's, like, a kiosk for, like, Starbucks coffee with a Starbucks sign above it, like, as though Starbucks had paid to get inside Tyrese's house. Like, the same way, like, at your college, like, they'll have, like, you know, like, college, like, you know how that looks, Starbucks kiosk. So there's that on the left. When you first walk in, there's this, like, fire pit that's, like, really dope where it's, like, sunken in, and there's, like, a wide range of seats. And then you go further back, there's, like, a whole structure, and in the structure is the private nightclub that Oliver was spinning at when we got in. No one else is there. Oliver's just, like, playing music by himself. And then Tyrese takes us behind the DJ booth where there's a VIP room inside the club.
There was no one else in the club, though.
Yeah. You could have sat anywhere in the club.
No, he's just showing us around the club.
Yeah.
And then so the VIP room has, like, a table that I think, I'm trying to remember if this is right, but it turns, there's, like, a hot tub around the table if people want it. Like, you can take the tabletop off and turn it into a hot tub.
This is very, like, Pimp My Ride.
Yeah, it's insane.
You also showed up on the one night where no one else is there.
Well, no, but, like, so I think
it was a private event.
No, he has parties and stuff. And, like, since Aziz has gotten invited to parties and, like, forwards us the invitation, be like, any of you guys gonna go? Cause, like,
how's the artwork on the invitation?
I mean, it's like club promotion.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And none of us have gone. There was one where I was like, because I moved to L, or I moved back here, like, right after that. Or yeah. I might have already been here or something.
That was your going away party?
Yeah. Well, it was actually Anise's birthday, too. Around Anise's birthday. So, like, it's for Anise's birthday.
Oh, my God.
Happy birthday, Anise.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anise has dope birthday parties, I guess. And so, but, like, no one's gone yet. But I remember one time, like, Sandberg, like, I think, like, everyone's kind of nervous to go without Aziz. Even though, like, we were all there or whatever.
So I remember one video that Andy took. Is that right? To put on his or on the Lonely Island Instagram. Is that right?
Honestly, so there's this one video where before I want to finish the Tyrese house tour.
Yeah.
So above the club is a barbershop, nail salon, massage parlor.
Oh my God.
And then there's, like, a terrace up top for, like, just, like, normal grilling too. That almost
Wait,
looks
does
like...
Oliver work in the nail salon?
No, he brings in people to do.
Oliver doesn't do everything.
No, Oliver only DJs and cooks.
Only.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, you can cook and you can DJ sort of.
Yep. Yeah. But nobody hires me to
do
their
you're like a B-side Oliver.
Yeah.
Cuz you're a fucking iPhone DJ and you can't cook Benihana and
right.
You throw a knife up.
Send your
air.
CV too.
Yeah. Yeah. So then upstairs is, like, it's almost like an MTV Spring Break house type vibe where it's, like, open space and there's, like, this, like, patio area, but then right next to it is this, like, enclosed structure where it's, like, probably, like, a barbershop where people can get their haircut or, like, you can get manicures done or whatever, or, like, massages and shit. And then you go to the you go even further than that, and there's this, like, space where he had a big, like, a big theater projector set up, and it's, like, a screen the size of a movie screen, but it's outdoor. And so, like, you can, like, I think randomly, like, Finding Nemo was on it when we got there, but no one was watching. It was just, like, it was probably, like, whatever the last, like, Blu-ray or whatever
was. Do you think Tyrese was like, when I grow up, I want to live in a mall?
No, I think he was sort of just, like, he was sort of saying, like, he wants a place where his friends can come hang out, where it's, like, not fucking crazy. Since then, he's added, like, and you could see this on Instagram. He didn't tell me this. I saw it on Instagram. He's added, like, an Optimus Prime and a Bumblebee statue that are...
From Transformers.
Yeah, true to life size, all right, to life in the movie.
Right.
Like, the to scale, like, the size of those statues.
This is like a mall.
Yeah. Well, he put one of them, again, from Instagram, he put one of them in his front yard, and I think the neighbors complained. I think it's this whole thing.
Does he have any water fountains?
No, I mean, it's really
well. Yeah, that'd be over the top.
No, it's really well, it's very, like, I think it all looks really good. Like, I mean, it's all tastefully done. Like, the Benihana, so...
It's tastefully done. There's two giant Transformers in the backyard next to the Benihana, next to the Starbucks.
Maybe you have shitty taste. Maybe Tyrese and my taste align. But the Benihana, it's like this... So, the Benihana is its own, like, little room. It's like a cabana, sort of. And so, the walls are really cool because they're... full sliding door walls that you can, like, kind of expose. Like, you can, like, pulled them to the side so that it's all open, which is like pretty dope.
Does he have? Does the bathroom have automatic dryers?
Wait, I don't even. Weirdly enough, I don't think I went to the bathroom at Tyrese's house, which was a mistake on my part, I guess.
Yeah, really.
But the videos though.
Oh yeah. So then, I mean, I think Tyrese inherently is just like he's a grinder. He's like a hustler. I think one of the things that like so he wanted us like to take videos for like Instagram and stuff like that or whatever, and so one of them was this video where like. So Oliver's just playing music in the back, not like DJing, but just like there's a playlist going.
Yeah.
And Bugatti comes on and it's pretty fucking insane. And we just go crazy for it. And Tyree's like, oh my God, this is a thing. I got to video this. And
oh, he did it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because Tyree shot it and then he pulled it into selfie mode. But I will say there's two videos on the internet. I think the one that's like really the one that like he posted, uh-huh. I think we had to do a reshoot because there's something about like
it was too turnt.
Honestly, it wasn't. Yeah, there was something about it. But then Oliver timed the fire volcano to the drop in Bugatti. It's pretty fucking crazy.
Whoa. That's awesome.
Oliver's very talented. Yeah. You're trying to shit on Oliver.
No.
Oliver knows he has a minute and 45 to make it from the DJ booth to
grill. He was like a Benihana chef. That like
how was the food?
I mean, the food is dope, but Benihana food is great. It's like
did he have a set menu or could you?
He was like, you can get all, like, there, I think there is a menu normally, but he's like, here are the things you can get. And then he made some special stuff for us too, like this, like, lobster noodle thing that was really good. Yeah, I mean, Benihana food is great. It's like, yeah, teppanyaki, like, that shit's dope. It's a lot of butter. It's great.
If Oliver ever wants to be on the podcast, we will absolutely welcome him on.
Do you have the connect?
No, literally none of us have a way to get to Oliver. Sorry.
Let's go back to the very beginning. How do you end up in Tennessee? Like your parents moved down there.
My parents moved there. So I went with them.
Were you born in Tennessee?
No, I was born in North Carolina. And then we moved to live in Portland for a year. And then I lived in Tennessee from second grade until college.
But what did your parents do?
My dad was a pastor. And so he had a church there.
A church in where in North Carolina?
In Knoxville.
In Knoxville, Tennessee. Yeah. But you were born in North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah. I think my dad was, I guess he was going to seminary at the time. And that's why he was there. And then his first church was in Portland. They only did that for a year, which I guess is weird. But then this other church happened in Knoxville. And it's like fucking like a Korean church in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's like you can imagine how many people there are.
Well, there. Is there a large Korean?
No, like 50, 80 people or something like that.
It wasn't they were all going to that church.
No, that's how many people are going to church. There are at least 150 Korean people there. I knew 100 of them.
Did you grow up very religious?
Yeah. I mean, I believe in God. Like, sure. I mean, that's like, yeah.
Let's talk about it.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't want to talk about it.
See, that was one of Jeff's dry jokes right there.
Wow. I guess once you're on the mic, you just never know. Because he looks at, Jeff, the way you look when you're on a podcast, and I say this, you know, because it's the first time you and I have talked on a podcast in a while, is much different than the way you look in real life.
Because I'm like, actually looking at you?
You're looking at me, but you have, like, this smirk the entire time. It's very hard to read.
Only because I know that Cho is about to, like, go in on me at any point. Like, that's what it's like to talk to David Cho.
No, but I feel like David
that's not what it's like for Eric.
David is not the same on text as he is on podcast.
Yeah, I mean, in text, it's an incredibly private forum where I can shit on you the entire time.
Yeah, Cho is definitely the aggressor, and I'm just waiting for him
to... Oh, stop. But in real life, I mean, whatever, who cares? Let's talk about something else. What were you talking about?
This is all going to get edited out.
Yeah.
So you were religious to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, honestly...
You're an only child, by the way.
Yeah, I'm an only child. And, like, I think growing up in Tennessee was good because it, like, shaped... Being a Korean kid in Tennessee, in Knoxville, forces you to learn how to get along with a lot of different people. Like, that's one of the things that I get the most nervous about like, you know, in a post-internet world, the idea of, like, if you're a weirdo back then, and I was, and I still am, but, like, if you're a weirdo back then, you sort of have to, like, learn how to get along with people, or else you're gonna be fucking lonely and have no friends. Whereas today, it's like, all right, let's say you're into, I use this analogy in meetings a lot, but it's like, let's say you're into roller skating, Robin Hood, and I don't know, like the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say there's 15 other people who are into that in the world. Now with the internet, you can sort of find those 15 people and you can sort of be like...
Yeah, you can double down on your...
You can double down on your weirdness, not be forced to learn how to get along with people, how to communicate, how to sort of work through things.
Right.
And I think that'll create like this really insular group of human beings. And like, I think it'll create this like bifurcation of like people and the way they interact with people where it's like, I wonder what a kid who's 13 now who can do that and retreat into these things and not be faced to like forced to sort of like I create some like character building things when they're 30 and in the workforce, or when they're 25 in the workforce, like how they'll be able to conflict resolve and things like that when you're forced to interact with other people.
Well, I think that you're seeing that already on like Twitter and stuff. Like everybody has these identity politics where they own this one part of themselves and are very vocal about it.
That's a different thing though, where I think it's like that's like the behind the screen anonymous like attacking shit that you're allowed to do on the internet, which, you know, I think is sort of that's a different, I mean it's part of it, but I think we're in to see an interesting workforce and interesting sort of things to happen. I think interesting things will happen in the next, you know, 15 years because of that.
Well, that's being, you know, if the world is even around in 15 years.
I mean, it's not, the world's not going to be over in 15 years, Jeff.
I don't know.
Is that a joke?
That's not a joke.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this the day after we sent 59 Tomahawk missiles to Syria and the Supreme Court, or I guess like now you don't need a complete majority, or like, you know,
right,
unilateral majority in Congress to, or in the Senate to get it, to accomplish anything. And,
right. Right.
You know, so I get
your hesitance. You know, like global warming and all that stuff.
I mean, global warming's not going to end the world in 15 years. That's as crazy as thinking global warming doesn't exist. You're on the other side of the of climate change.
It's going to be in 2 years.
That's right. Wait, you're a climate change falser.
Wait, do you and Justin identify on both growing up in Tennessee?
The Tennessee thing was a big part of when we first met. I mean, that was like, you know, the way that all happened. I mean, it was like a very long and drawn out process before Justin and I actually met, because he has people around him that sort of wanted me to come in. But when we met, I mean, I think there was an immediate sort of similarity of not backgrounds necessarily, but the idea of like, I mean, he's a dude who grew up in Tennessee up until he was like 12 or something, and then eventually right after that like went around the world and like saw all these different things and had these like very like unique life experiences. And I think, you know, and also it's like we're similar ages, and you know, one of the things that we talk, or that I sort of think is interesting, is like, you know, his NSYNC was his high school. Like the embarrassing things you do when you're in high school is like NSYNC, and like the prom is that like denim on denim Britney and yeah, him picture. And then like, you know, Justified, his first album, is sort of like college, right? And
right,
then mm-hmm, like Future Sex is like kind of like your first like real job where you're like whatever. And then 2020 is like you're sort of like, I kind of made it, so I'm gonna stunt. So I have like the best director David Fincher direct my music video.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have the best designer do all of my suits in Tom Ford. I'm gonna have the best rapper alive on my song or whatever. And I think there is this like very like human experience that he's had on like a bigger scale. And because we're similar ages, it's sort of like that, where it's like, I remember I went to go see Justified with
Christina Aguilera.
No, that was, I don't think it was with Christina. It was Justin performed, I think it was solo at the Garden, and I saw that with the College Humor people at the time, and we all bought tickets. And like, I remember I was sort of like, oh, I can like buy tickets for this thing that's kind of expensive now without like feeling too much guilt.
Right.
And like, Future Sex was like similar. I think Future Sex, it must have been like during Radar or The All or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, which is sort of like, I like kind of, that one, it was like my first real job. And then, I guess, no, that must have been College Humor. And then either way, Future Sex came out when I'd moved to LA for Grantland. And that was sort of like that was like sort of at the time felt like stunting a little bit. And so, well,
so
now we're here.
Although
he has a kid and I don't, so.
Right. But for him, he has a different appreciation, or maybe an equal appreciation, but a different experience with Pharrell, clearly.
Yeah.
Than you do. But does he have the same sort of like...
Well, we talk about it, right? Like, so on his first album, like they have clips on it, right? Like that's probably a lot of people's first introduction to the clips, because it's before even Hell Hath No Fury.
Yeah.
Right. I believe. Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, the first album had come
out.
No,
it's after Lord Willin
had come in.
Yeah. And so it's sort of like that thing, like when you're in college and like you get into all these different other things. Like I remember, like I had a Clips, a Weezer, and some other bullshit, like maybe like a Blink-182 poster in my room my freshman year of college.
So basic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. But you know that my tastes are very basic. Like I have like very broad tastes of like whatever.
Right.
But like it's sort of like that's the thing. Like that's sort of what you were into at the time. Because when you're in college, you're sort of like absorbing all these things and seeing all these interesting ways that you're like I remember when I was in college, like I had like this very weird like emo pop punk phase where I was like really into Saves the Day and like
shit like that. Wow. But, yeah.
Does he have an appreciation of Kanye? Like, you have an appreciation of Kanye? Like, does he...
I think
like,
it's his different interest. I mean, he likes Kanye. I don't think... actually, we haven't really talked about it. But, I mean, I think he likes things of wide-ranging, you know, right. whatever.
Because they're, you know, a similar age, too, and experience. So I wonder, like, what that's like going through that.
Yeah, but I don't Kanye's think he's also, like, on the other side of, like...
And Kanye, like, now is also just, like, I mean, who... Like, I say this is, like, the biggest Kanye head, and, like, I mean...
Right.
I guess... Did we say we're going to talk about my experience with Kanye?
Yeah. Not? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, but, like, I mean, I love Kanye. Like, one of the best concert experiences of my life, or, like, live music experiences of my life, was seeing him at the Box. Like, that night still is unrivaled as, like, the best way to see your favorite artist perform without any sort of, like, blemishes of, like, whatever. But so I guess this was like probably 4 years ago now. When I was living in LA, I was swimming at a friend's house and they were like, oh, this how was I say? So I was swimming at Aziz's house and Aziz and Kanye are friends and Kanye was like, Kanye's coming. It's like, oh fuck. And there were like four or five of us there. And so he comes by and we're like at this point, like I'm just like, oh fuck. Like also it's like one of those things, like the day you really like get to hang, I'd gone to one of the Watch the Throne recordings, but like we didn't really talk because there was a lot of people in the room at the time, but like this was like one of the first times like Kanye and I were really gonna be able to like presumably talk.
Sure.
And I remember I was just, like, I dressed to go swimming at someone's house, and so like I wasn't like looking, I mean I don't think I ever looked that cool, but like, I didn't look cool.
You didn't look the way you wanted to.
Yeah, it's not the Kanye. Way you want to sure. meet Kanye.
Yeah.
And so
were you wearing flip-flops?
No, I mean, come on, that was still me. But I actually remember what I was wearing. I was wearing Jordan 3s. I was wearing blue or true blue Jordan 3s. But so he comes in, and at some point, somehow we like all decided like we stopped swimming, we come in to talk to him, and I think we were listening to Tribe actually at the time. And so Tribe is playing in the speakers, and
shouts to Consequence.
Yeah, shouts to Consequence. And we're talking, and so we end up sitting in a way. Like, where Kanye's sitting at a table, I'm sitting on a sofa, but the table and sofa are really close to each other, where it's, like, we're probably, like, Jeff and I are probably sitting, there's, like, 3.5 feet between us.
Yeah.
We were probably even closer than this from face to face. Like, face to face, we were closer than that. And I was, like, freaking out. And I've never wanted someone to like me more. Like, I mean, you know, it's, like, I was just there. I was just, like, not pandering, but I kind of wanted to be myself.
Like, laughing, like, extra hard.
Well, you do that around famous people no matter what, I think. That's, like, a natural reaction. But I think it was just more, like, the idea, like, I wanted to be myself and I wanted him to like me for who I was.
Right.
Did it work?
No. And, and so the music's playing and he's like, yo, can we turn that down? Like, I can't focus. And I was like, and so someone goes and turns it down and talk for like 10 minutes more. And then he's like, so it's like really soft. Like, you can barely hear it. And then he's like, yo, someone just turned that off. I can't focus. And I was like, we're like, okay. So we're sitting there in silence and he starts talking. And so this is like, it's funny because the things he said while we were there, and again, this is like a pretty intimate setting. It wasn't that dissimilar to the Westwood or Zane Lowe interview. One of those interviews they did around that time where he like went crazy. It was like in a studio in front of a soundboard. I don't know if it was
that Zane Lowe.
Was it Zane Lowe? So yeah. It's like kind of stuff he was saying there where it's like people expect him to be pop because of his wife and all this stuff. And I was like, so I was just like ask questions because I was interested in what he's saying. And he's like, well, people expect that. I was like, well, he's like, people expect me to make music that isn't popular, and that's why I made Jesus. And it's like, wait, you think people think you're gonna make radio friendly music because you're married to Kim Kardashian now? He's like, yeah, that's what I think. And I was like, being very aggressive. And then I was like asking him something. And he's like, no, that's not it. And I was like, oh fuck. And then so then like at one point, yeah, we keep talking. And he's like, he's told me no, I'm wrong like two or three times. Maybe twice at this point. Yeah, twice at this point. And then, so then he starts talking about his dentist being like, how, like, my dentist can't talk to me without bringing up, making everything into a music analogy. And it's like, dentist fam, I understand what it's like to go buy bread for my family. You have to be like, you don't have to say it like, when you're, me buying bread for my family is like when you're in the studio. And then I was like, oh, it sounds like a chill dentist. It's like, no, he's not a chill dentist. What do you not understand? And I was like, dude, I was just kidding. I was being sarcastic.
That's like a Jeff joke.
And he was like, he nods. He's like, oh yeah. Oh, I could see how that'd be funny.
He just kept going. Oh, God.
Great first impression with Kanye.
Yeah, no. And so the other thing he said that I was sort of incredulous about after that was like, I remember this very vividly because it was probably the day when you're...
The worst day of your life.
Yeah. And then he was like, what was I going to say? Oh, he was talking about how he loves Uber and how, you know, he doesn't fly first class all the time. And he was like, how he took a Southwest flight for something. And he was like, I was sitting coach in between these two people. And I was like, that must have been so weird for them to be sitting next to you on this flight. And he looks at me, he's like, it was weird for everyone, man. Okay. I'll go. I just remember I was like, oh, so now you hate me.
Yeah.
Which is, God. I mean, Kanye, it's so complicated.
Wait, so...
And I'd seen him after that. He doesn't remember that at all. So, it's blank slate with him. So.
But he remembers you.
No, I don't think he remembers that, probably.
You don't think so?
No, because think of how many fucking Asian kids that are excited to meet him he must meet in his life, and like how I'm just like a fleeting moment.
Do you think if you were in a setting like you were at the studio, like you were, you know, meeting Pharrell, do you think if you were in this area that you had to get through security and you were there,
yeah,
and he walked in, Kanye? He saw you, would he?
No, not at all. I wouldn't register in his brain. And him and I have been in settings like that, like a decent, like, more times than on my hand I can count. Like, I've been in their green room, like, after watching...
And you still don't think that he would recognize you?
No, he meets so many people. Like, I think the amount of retention you have for famous people, unless they're really good about it, is pretty short. Like,
But you made the dentist joke. He would remember that.
Well, if you were wearing your True Blues?
No, he doesn't remember any of that shit. No fucking way. Like, I mean, you guys remember, it's like the time... Oh, God. You can't... There's so many sentences here where it's like, you just sound like an asshole. But there are things that we've talked about in the past that we'll talk about this on the podcast.
Right.
Like that time when I met Jay-Z for the first time.
And you played Connect Four.
Jenga.
Right, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
And
yeah.
And Jay-Z introduced to us the idea of a table burger, and he was at the Spotted Pig, and yeah, we're having dinner, and it was like 10-12 people, and he came to our table and sat with us for a while, and we were ordering, and he's like, what'd you guys get? Because he came in late, and he was like, oh, we got this and this. He's like, you guys didn't get a table burger? And I was like, what? The burger for the table for everyone to share. Everyone wants a burger. I'm like, oh, that is a good point. Everyone does want a burger. So we've got a table burger. Since then, I've gotten a table burger. I don't credit it to Jay-Z.
You really should.
You just did right now.
Yeah, well, yeah, but like, yeah, that's because we're on a podcast about rap music. And like, I'm just giving you all my rap stories at once. Because I have 10 of them. But no, so that was right after All-Star. It was the first time I've been to All-Star. And I actually met Steve Stout then.
All-Star in New York City.
No, it was in New Orleans. No, Orlando. It was in Orlando.
Oh, you were there too?
Yeah,
we went down.
We went down there.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
Yeah,
wouldn't we have hung out?
That was my first year with like ESPN and Grantland and stuff. So I'm sure like I was like caught up in all that stuff.
Also, Orlando's a really like spread out.
It was
city.
Not easy to get around. Yeah. But I told him a story about how Benny the Bull was harassing Steve Stout and like spraying like silly string on his head and his bald head and like rubbing it around. And Jay laughed at it. And also, like, I should say, Jay-Z is the dopest person of all time. Where incredibly, I mean, people say this is like the Bill Clinton style charisma, where it's like the exact opposite experience I had with Kanye, where it's like, I loved him. He made it seem like he cared about you, and it was just like so.
That's
dope.
Awesome.
And it's so, and all of that makes sense. Like, all of it, when you consider like the way they work and the vibes of all that stuff, it all comes together. But so I told you that story. He laughed really hard. I was like, oh, fuck, this is it. And I felt so comfortable that we started playing Jenga, and then he was like using two hands. Like, you can't use two hands, fam. And he was like, oh, all right.
See, but when I interviewed him for Rolling Stone, he said that was... You had said that was his first time playing Jenga. He said it was not his first time playing Jenga.
He told me that. I mean, who knows? I'm pretty sure that's true, but maybe it's not. Maybe he was just telling us that for whatever. But so then, a week later, that next week, and this is how this goes back to sort of celebrity human being retention, someone told me they were with Jay, and they're like, oh, he was telling us this funny story about Steve Stout and Benny the Bull. I was like, oh, fuck, that's my story.
He stole your bit?
No, he didn't steal my bit. He was just sort of like telling someone else the thing,
which is, I was like, oh my God, like I'm still in his brain. I was like, I need to see him one more time in the next 2 weeks so I can really like cement this lifelong friendship we're gonna have.
Right.
It never happened. I mean, I saw him like a year later. He did not bring that up. He did not remember me. He was like, it's nice to meet you. I was like, yeah.
So how do you go from Wake Forest graduating and moving to New York City, which, by the way, had you been here before?
No. I mean, I was like a child, like when I was five. It was very, it's really weird. I mean, like, cause I, my freshman year at Wake Forest, everyone gets a laptop, and they have these things called RTAs that live on your, in your building, and like or in your dorm or whatever.
Mm-hmm. What's people, an RTA?
Resident Technical Advisor. So they're supposed to help you with your laptops or whatever. My RTA ended up being this guy, Ricky Van Veen.
Whoa.
Who at the time had just started College Humor, and he, we became kind of friends, and like, like at the time, like, I mean, I guess, we were friends, and he was like, just like, we just got along, whatever. And I think he always was sort of like, this guy's a goofball, but he has interesting taste and whatever. And then when I was graduating, I was like looking for jobs, and like, it was like, I was very nonchalant about it. I mean, the way that like, sort of like, kind of like, not aimless, but like the way 21 year olds can be nonchalant about like, sort of like the job search and like the reality of those things. Like, I think I kind of like stupidly assumed everything would work out. And at the time, Ricky was like, do you want to come work with us? And I think at the time I wanted to be a writer. So I'd like been applying to jobs to sort of be like, I'd had internships and stuff like that in the past, like in Korea and in London, in like different capacities.
What was your major?
English. Mm-hmm. And a minor in psych. And so
what'd you want to write about?
Just like anything. I think I wanted to be an editor at GQ. And I remember like I was talking to someone about it, and they're like, like, this is how much it pays. And it was like nothing. I was like, fuck, I'm poor. I don't have to do this shit. And then Ricky was like, you want to come work with us? It'll pay you. We'll pay you this much, which was more than that. And I was like, oh, shit, I'll do this. And then,
and so, that was to do what at College Humor?
They had started a T-shirt company, like a funny T-shirt company at the time. And it was like probably 6 months old. And they just like wanted someone to run it. And so then.
And that was Busted Tees.
That was Busted Tees. And they'd started like a couple other things like that were like retail oriented. And they're like sort of like. Like, think about, and I'd had like minor like marketing experience and stuff like that, my internships, but ultimately like it was just sort of like, well, what if we tried this? What if we tried that? And he was just like, all right, cool, just do this. And then at the time it was four of them plus Jeff Rubin, who was an intern, and we all went to go work out of their apartment.
You were employee number.
There was me, Streeter, and Aziz or Amir came in at the same time. And I guess we were technically 6, 7, and 8.
Wow.
Like simultaneously. Because we all started the same day. And then Amir and I met and we became roommates at that point.
So what was New York City like for you? Like, was it...
It was pretty dope.
No, but like, was it like too big? Was it too fast? Was it...
No, I don't think I was like... I wasn't internalizing things that way. I was just sort of like... Again, it's very weird. Like, especially considering how I am now. It's like, I didn't really think about anything. I was just sort of like, I just kind of went with it. And like... Josh and Ricky at that point had just been in the New York Times and the New Yorker and gotten like, they'd like leveled up as like sort of like where they existed, and you know, and they were sort of like on Gawker a bunch and all this shit. And and so like I remember at the time, like they would just like take me to all these things because like we were all just friends, and like I would always just go with them as like their plus one to all these like random media things or random whatever things, and I'd be like, holy shit, this is kind of dope.
You're making it sound like, you know, Gawker was no big deal, and Gawker was like the place to be,
but it's
in
not
media.
A big deal when you think of the size of it, right? So at the time Gawker probably had maybe 1.5 million readers at most. It's not that many. It's being run by two people. It wasn't what it is today.
No, but it had like that cachet of like, oh, you're hanging out at Gawker, you're hanging out on the rooftop.
At the time there was no rooftop, it was at Den's apartment, like that's where it was going down. Which, like, but at the time, that none of that shit mattered to me. Like, I didn't give a fuck. Like, I didn't know who this guy was. I remember the first time I met Nick Denton, who started Gawker. I was like, and he's, like, this weird dude. He's, like, mellowed out now. But, like, I remember being like, oh, like, and I'm so earnest and so nice. This is, like, literally the first week I live in New York. I'm like, oh, like, you helped Josh and Ricky out. This has been great for them. Thank you so much. And he's like, yeah, I like their traffic. Because at the time, College Humor would link to things, and they would link to Gawker stories and help Gawker's traffic or whatever. And I was like, yeah, I mean, totally. But like, I mean, it's like really changed their lives. Like, you can see like the market difference and like whatever. And he's like, yeah, I like the traffic. We literally had this exchange like fucking three times. And I was like, all right, we might be done here as for this conversation. But like, yeah, I mean, I at the time, like, it's crazy to think back to it now. And I guess I haven't really, but just like New York was just sort of like, it was really fun. And it was like,
It was like you were living like Sex in the City. Like I remember going like Soho House and bullshit like that.
Who did you meet that ended up leveling up like pretty quickly?
Well, I mean, it's crazy to think that all of those comedians at the time like were, I mean, relatively nobody, whether it's an Aziz or a Nick Kroll or a Chelsea Peretti. And like these people that we would like hang out with and watch Lost with would now are like all like sort of alt comedy dudes. But I mean, you know, I think testament to those people, they're all like still pretty much the same people. But I mean, at the time, like none of it, like you don't think about any of that stuff. And also because it didn't feel, everything didn't feel as sort of like now everything feels like it has repercussions or potentially because like everything's documented on the internet and like Twitter's really big and, you know, like pick their Instagram things everywhere and you can sort of have all these like broadcast these things that are happening. But this was still at the tail end of like, I think Twitter came out in 2007. This is, there's like 2 years of like, or three, and Twitter didn't become big until 2008 or 2009. It's like there's still this time where you can sort of like just do shit and like, you know, none of it's about like posturing and none of it's like about all this other stuff. So
what was the difference between College Humor before and after it was bought by Barry Diller?
It didn't really change. I mean, the College Humor's most marked change probably happened like after I'd left. I think. I mean, like the only thing that the Barry thing, the IAC and Barry sale changed was we got bigger offices. And stuff like that. They doubled down on Vimeo, which was good. Mm-hmm. And then, but yeah, I mean, it didn't really change like culturally, you know.
And what about your title? How much did that change?
I mean, nothing changed. No. I came in.
But you were more than just the Busted Tees, you know.
Sort of. I mean, I came in at like at a inflated title for a 21-year-old. I just, instead of like it going up, I just became more adept at being able to handle those things. And like, I learned how to like, and again, at the time, like if I was like smarter, I would have like honestly worked even harder than I did. Because at the time we worked really hard because it was like a frat, you know, like I remember like, I organized like a field day for us, like where we were like split up into teams and fucking play games. But it was like a frat because we'd all moved to New York at the same time. It was all like guys of a similar age or guys and some girls of a similar age. And, you know, we just all hung out together all the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then I made like my own friends and, you know, whatever. But no, I think like it's crazy because it's like I learned a lot about how the internet affects retail and how the internet affects communication. And I think those are things that I sort of always think about inherently because like I'm like now I'm like a very like curious person about the way things work and blah blah blah. Like I mean even the stuff you're talking about like how like in you know sort of kids who are isolated who find their communities online, how that affects like the global like workforce, like things like that. Like I didn't think like that at the time. I was just sort of like, oh well, you know, we need to like, I remember like they incentivized me like, okay, if we reach, I think it was like how much was it? It was like if we make like $200,000 in sales for this month, we'll get you a new pair of sneakers. And I was like, all right, I'll figure out how to do that. So I did that, which is a horrible deal for me because it was like $150 pair of sneakers. I was like, well, this is, I may have fucked this up. But I think I learned a lot from them. Just like, but it's also a different time. Like at the time, like startup culture wasn't a thing. Like startup culture in New York, especially, wasn't a thing. Like it wasn't this thing like today where it's like everyone wants to be an entrepreneur and there's all these like there's so many like it's such being an entrepreneur is such a job now. Like that
it was
people
not
aspire
the thing
to
back
be.
Then.
Not really.
Like
I mean,
you weren't running the same circles as like what's his name from Tumblr and
yeah. I mean, we were all in the same circles, but it wasn't the same thing where it's like you didn't have kids at business school like. You know, if you go to GSB or like HBS right now, like a business school in Stanford or business school in Harvard, it's like all those kids, all they want to do is start their own companies and they want to, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like that wasn't a thing at that point. It didn't become normalized until I think like probably because of like David Karp and Tumblr and things like that. And because of the Twitter dudes and because of, you know, and that's how you have Evan from, you know, Snapchat becoming who he is. Because like we met Zuckerberg like really early because one of our good friends was the first sales guy at Facebook. And he's just like this weirdo. And we're just like, oh, this is weird. And he came to our office and we hung out and like whatever. But like it's not, he was. But
what was he wearing?
Literally the same. I mean, it was the same thing.
Were yeah, you like, this guy could be president of the United States of America?
No, I just remember thinking he was very weird. And he's very soft-spoken. He's just like a little weirdo. And it's like, I'm sure, I mean, he was really young at the time.
Were
like,
you on Facebook?
Yeah, Wake Forest didn't have it when I was there, we had it when I was there, but it was still really early. I mean, yeah. It wasn't what it was now. Like, I remember, I think I got my senior year, and I was like, fuck, if this had been around when, like, I was in college, girls, I mean, that was my primary. I was like, oh, sure. There's so many girls in my class that I could have, like, messaged. That wasn't a culture of that. Like, now it's, like, such a, there's a TV show about, like, I remember I wanted to write a TV show about,
Ricky and Josh. I don't think I've ever even told you guys this. Like, I wrote out like some of a pilot where I was like, oh, this is like, there would be a funny TV show of like Entourage, but New York, but with these like dudes who start a website and then come into all this like world or whatever. And then like, I remember I started it. I told Ricky, but I was like, don't do it.
He was like, and then it turned into Silicon Valley.
That's right.
I mean, it's different than that because it was more about like, it was more Entourage where it's like they kind of like fall in, like these two dudes. And because I knew Ricky as like, you know, a 20-year-old who's like kind of like didn't know his way in the world, and like now he's fucking, you know, just
yeah, going to like the Met Ball and
yeah. And it's like, and so you sort of see that thing of like, oh, there's this kid,
yeah,
who's this thing, and then he's put in this world.
That's
and
really wild.
This other thing, yeah, it's crazy to say it all like that, but yeah, I mean, that was.
Did you go to his wedding?
I didn't, because okay. I mean, once I stopped working at College Humor, I guess Ricky and I were still close for a while, and then I mean, we've become closer recently, but mm-hmm. I mean. His wedding was small, and it was like...
This is in, like, Montana or something, right?
Yeah, and it was also, like, I mean, it was just a shitload of famous people, and, like, I didn't have the... I don't have the Q score to...
So, when did you know it was time to leave College Humor?
I think it was sort of, like, I hadn't been getting along. Like, they gave me a boss at one point through ISC, and I didn't get along with him, really. And it was sort of, like, whatever. I actually wanted to transition into media. I'd been talking to this magazine called Radar for a while, and I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And it was sort of like, how do you have a magazine succeed on the internet, and like, what does that look like? And I think because I'd wanted to work at magazines before, and like, I was just like, oh, this is like cool. And it was like, it seemed like a cool opportunity, and it seemed like they were doing something. Like, Radar at the time was like, it was sort of seen as the next Talk or the next Spy, like these like sort of like fabled publications that sort of have this like kind of like, they make a general interest magazine that doesn't pander to these like with the whims of all these things. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And so I think it was sort of like, I think we both sort of saw the writing on the wall, and I was like, it kind of like made sense for me to move on. And I like, it had gone so far away from being just like us and our friends hanging out that it wasn't like feelings or anything like that. And so then I took like a month and a half off where like I literally just like watched on demand in my apartment all the like every day, because it was so hot in the summer. But like, I just remember being like, oh, like I should take my time off and like whatever. And so then I did that. And then
did that change your dynamic with Amir at all? Because Amir was such like a huge part of College Humor still.
No, I mean, like, I would still be like, I think I was still in like I was in the first Hardly Working, which was just which is like an original content series that we did, which by the way, Complex is doing like something very similar to that now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I saw that.
In their office.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I think the first one was me throwing a hoodie at Jake and then the hood, like we did a cut where the hoodie was on Jake right when it landed. That was like the very first Hardly Working. I mean, it was the first Jake and Amir. I don't remember. But, like, it's like, no, I mean, we were all still friends, and, like, we still hang out and all that stuff. I mean, none of that was weird. I think it was just because it became, like, one of those things, like, I had, like, I started making other friends and, like who worked in media or who were in, like, I don't know, fashion,
right, other
or
circles,
shit like,
yeah,
that. Yeah, and they sort of stayed in that circle and, like, went deeper on, like, you know.
I have three big remembrances from your time at Radar. One
Jeff
is
and I met.
That you met Jeff, yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Two is that you, when I met you for the first time, it was when
which
Radar
is like 10 years ago, which is crazy,
was honoring Na Wright and
yeah.
Eske.
That issue was planned before I worked there.
Okay.
But obviously I was like so excited because like I was a huge Na Wright fan.
Yeah,
and I
right.
loved like Eske was like a famous person to me.
And like and by the way, like what that meant to our community of, you know, this blogging, you know, hip hop internet, you know, group of ours, like meant a lot. There was like, that was like,
yeah, well, because we had like, there were other people on the list who were like more like famousy famous or
sure.
or like New York Times like contributors and stuff like that,
and like Concrete Loop too, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like him, is that Angel, is that the name of the
Angel,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah, Angel, and then there are two other people I think that were lumped into this sort of like before Black internet was a thing that
yeah.
sort of like identified it as this like huge influence on this very important, very like active group on, and it's still sort of an underrepresented group within the general context of media because it still hides out in like the corners of like VH1 rather than in like mainstream shit.
Right.
And it's crazy that like, you know, that's not more of a thing.
Well, no, I think it ends up being a huge thing because, you know, everything that Black Twitter declares like important ends up, you
yeah.
know, becoming important.
I mean, the most recent example of that, I remember the most recent, but like the biggest, most recent example is probably Khaled. Like DJ Khaled is like born out of Black Twitter that becomes active on mainstream,
yeah.
and then now he's like everywhere. I
perfectly
really
Black Snapchat,
or Black Internet.
Yeah, Black Internet. Yeah. I just think it's crazy that you and I were introduced because our mutual. Well, I wasn't even like very close with Neil, but Neil was like, you guys both like rap,
Yeah, yeah. And Neil's like one of my best friends. Like, right. I don't think he even realized what he said into my. Who knew that when he did that 10 years ago that we'd be recording this podcast today? Wow. You know?
Yeah.
Podcasts weren't even a thing then.
But the third big thing that happened at Radar was that Radar changed.
It got sold.
Yeah, it got sold, and their whole like.
Yeah, now changed. it was bought by AMI, which is
and you left.
Yeah, it's
well,
like
I stayed longer than anyone else because they. So at the time, like things that happened where I was sort of like in charge of like the entire digital part of it,
mm-hmm.
and I remember I got a call that morning or like an email being like, how do you turn off everyone's email address? I was like, I don't know. Like someone like one of the execs, like the person who owned Radar is this guy who's Jesse Jackson's son. And at the time he was like the biggest investor. He emailed me and we'd had some meetings and he was like, how do you turn off everyone's email address? I was like, I don't know. And I was like, guys. And so I turned around and I was like, guys, this might be a thing. And then they figured it out and then they closed that day and everyone got drunk and whatever. But then they kept me on. So they were like, we need someone to help with the transition to figure shit out. And they're like, will you do that? And I was like,
yeah, I was telling my friends.
No. Well, it was like everyone had gone. I was like, I don't know. I mean, what do you want me to do? They're like, come to our office, you know, and just like whatever. And we'll pay. They're like, we'll pay you more than your salary to do this. And I was like, I guess I don't have a job. So yeah, I guess I'll do that. Sure. Well, what's crazy is 2 weeks before Radar ended, we started meeting about the All, and we started being like Corey, oh. Alex, and I have been like, let's leave Radar and start this thing.
So for anybody who doesn't know the All, and that's AWL, it was what'd you call it, like.
General interest website about the media. I mean, it was like,
no. What was the slogan though? It was
be less stupid.
Be less stupid. Yeah, but it was supposed to be like
a smarter Gawker.
Yeah, because Gawker at the time it turned into a closer version of what it is today, where it's like a little bit broader and like whatever. And I mean, you know, these guys who are really good writers who had like you know, who had sort of an audience, and we were like, well, you know, this is a time on the internet where you could still make money off words, and we're like, well, you know, why don't we give this a shot? Like, I was aware of how much money we were making at Radar and like sort of how it worked. I was like, okay, well, I think we could apply this to this and sort of find efficiencies here and there, because it's like we wouldn't have to get office. Like, there's all this, like, it's like if we cut a lot of the overhead and we cut, but we, you know, have like a much smaller amount of content, but we monetize it in a certain way. I was like, there's like maybe something here. So we'd had those meetings and they got closed. And then so I was using my AMI money, which was literally me just going to their office on like, I forget, it's like near Kips Bay, I guess, and being like, not knowing anyone, no one knowing why I was there. Every now and again, they'd ask me a question about WordPress. And I was just like in some days I'd be like, hey guys, I think I'm gonna work from home today. They're like, okay, fine. Cause no one knew me. And then like at some point, I think someone was like, I don't think you have to come in anymore. I was like, okay. But it's like, I never met a single person there except for the one person who like brought me in that first day. And I would sit at a cubicle and I'm like, who the fuck is this kid? And,
but when you guys started the All, there were three employees, right?
Yeah, it was the three of us.
Yeah.
It was the three of us for a long time.
How scary was that?
It wasn't scary until we started making, like, until it started, like, turned a corner a little bit and started making money. And then you kind of, like, got this thing of, like.
But why was it scary when you turned the corner? Because
now all of a sudden there's.
Make your investors their money back and then.
There's no investors. It was us. Yeah, it was just us.
No, but eventually, like, you never got
funding. No, we never got funding. It became, like, a lifestyle business, and we could, like, support ourselves. So that's the thing where it gets scary, because then all of a sudden, it's, like, every, like, you know, you make money every month, and you get paid every month from these different people that advertise on your website. And it's, like, well, fuck, if I don't do this, then the livelihood of these people is now on me. And I remember I was on the High Line at some party. Actually, I was at the IC building for some party, and, like, I, like, walked down the High Line. I was, like, fuck. Like, this is a lot of fucking pressure. Because it's like, you don't want people to not eat now because you don't have your shit together. Because it's just like, it was just different than when it started. Because when it started, it was sort of like, we're all doing this on a lark. Who knows if this will work or not? So then when it starts working, it's like, well, now we have to make it keep working and make it get bigger and all this shit.
So you're selling ads against.
Yeah, against the content. I mean, it was just at a time where you could make more money off ads and all these other different things that we would do. And like, you know,
you're doing sponsored posts and whatever.
Yeah, we would.
And
like,
you were the
publisher. we did like sponsored posts and like native ads before like anyone. Like, we built like native ad units and all this stuff that I thought at the time I was like, well, if I'm a brand, like, why wouldn't I want to be associated with this and this? I was like, and they would be like, well, can you make us a car or like Gillette would be like, can you make us content about razors? And I was like, no, but like if you want men, then we can write men's content that that sort of addresses these types of people that you want. And then they're like, okay, so then we'll do that. And so I would just write that stuff. And like, that's why I wrote that thing about why men should own sweaters, why you should own a cast iron skillet.
Yeah.
I think I wrote something about Gilmore Girls at one point.
Oh, see, big mistake by GQ to not, you know, up their money. And you could have been over there and a legacy.
And then we did that. And then that's when I sort of like, I'd gotten really into Bill Simmons at the time. And then.
Well, and I remember when you took those meetings, you told us that there was one job that you would take where you would leave the All.
Yeah, because the All just started, like, the All, like, started to become, like, pretty good for, like.
And another thing, by the way, that you deserve credit for is you had all these verticals in mind that would end up becoming Splitsider. And
yeah, I mean, my thinking was always sort of like, well, what if we could just, like, get rid of, like, you know, the intermediary between writers, their audience, and the people that pay them? And sort of like, okay, well, if you let people build audiences and just build a structure where it's like they can get paid a certain amount of money per audience and per volume of their website. And so it's sort of on them. So you just give them the system. So it's like, okay, how much money you want to make is on you. And we'll just give you the platform for it and we'll help you like grow and we'll give you the infrastructure and all that stuff. And I think that was like at the time, this was in 2010 and 9, like, you know, that was like a thing that we could have done. And I remember, yeah, like that was what I wanted to do. And then the only thing, yeah, like to your point, like the only thing that I was like, oh, I'll leave this for would be to do something with Bill, which is essentially the same thing. It's the idea of saying you have a human being with an audience. How do you maximize the things around him so that he can maximize the revenue that he can generate from his audience? And like, I remember I told someone, like, I get that was like, there's like, there are three things I think I need to do to get this job. And I was like, very confident. I was like, I need to have him know who I am. I need to get in the New York Times so that he knows that we're credible. And then, fuck, I don't even remember what the third thing was. But, like, I remember, like, so Katie Baker at the time had an in to him because he was a fan of hers. So I was like, Katie, write a column for us. And she was already...
She was working at Deadspin at the time.
I don't even know. She was, like...
Or actually, she was in finance?
She was in finance, like, we're ready to freelance.
Yeah.
And I was like... So then I was like, Katie, write something. And then she's like, okay. And then I talked to Alex and Cora. I was like, I'm going to blow this post out. Where I was like, which has been, like, building, like, these little images for it and, like, whatever. And then... And then he, I was like, Bill, see that. And then he did. And then we got in the Times. And there was like this Times story about us. And then he saw that. And then I remember like I emailed Bill. And I was like, Bill, I heard you're starting something. You know, I have a job that I love. Like, but if you ever want to talk, if you ever need any like sort of like whatever, like any bodies to help with anything, like just like as a, you know, because I support your movement, like let me know. And he's like, nah, we're good. Thanks.
Really?
Yeah. And this was like in January of that same year. And then on Cinco de Mayo, someone's like, oh, what's your phone number? Bill's going to call you. And I was like, what the fuck? And then he called me. And then we sort of like, I had like contract negotiations for like 2 months with ESPN.
David, one of the most impressive things about you is the level of executives that you are able to reach. Can you give the people out there a little insight into how you get into these rooms?
I mean, besides that, like, I think there's just the idea of, you know, I think a lot of times, and this is something I'd say this is the biggest thing I've gleaned over the last few years, is just like, you know, all these people are people, right? Like, they're human beings who make very human decisions. And I think a lot of times we want to sort of like put, you know, assume that like, whether it's a famous person or whether it's a company or whether it's whatever, it's like that these things are comprised of people who are capable of making decisions like sort of objectively or greater than, like larger than themselves. And I think one of the things that's been really interesting is the idea to see like, so pretty much all these people function in the way regular people do. Like they have their own self-interest, they have things that motivate them, and they have sort of, they make decisions in the way regular people do. And I think that's one of those things that when you realize it's a person, like it sort of makes everything possible, right? So, you know, I think like they're like people that are like geniuses, right? Like they're groundbreaking geniuses. Like
yeah, two of us, right?
Nice. Yeah. No, but like there's like the Steve Jobses of the world that like change everything. But like eventually when you look at like, you know, the people underneath them or the people further away from the genius, whoever that is, it's regular people that surround them. So it's very much like, you know, a dude who just wants to make it through their day and just wants their boss to tell them that they're doing a good job. You know, I think like the Pepsi commercial is like a really interesting example of that, where it's like ultimately that was just probably like seven people who made like sort of a weird decision and decided to let that get through. And it just so happened that those seven people just had like a lapse of judgment, or they were just saying there, it was their boss's idea. And they're like, yeah, this is a good idea. So I would say like the biggest thing to realize is like, if you think about it as like everyone's just a regular person, then that sort of like opens up the door to being like, well, pretty much anything's possible. Like, you know, I think I'm always surprised by A, how easy it is to get a hold of people. And I can just like email people and be like, hey, I'm a fan of this thing. People love giving advice. And if you're just like, oh, do you have a second to give me advice about this, that, or the other? Like, most people respond. Like, you might not get Kanye, but if you went for Don C or Virgil, like maybe 2 years ago, you probably could have gotten them on some tip. I think if you see that like on Twitter on and more so on Instagram now, it's like those things, like every famous person for the most part reads their Instagram comments. Like, that's like, it is a very real thing. And I think the biggest thing, I think, is just like the idea of like, there's certain people that have a few ideas that are better than other people's ideas. But for the most part, when they're not having those dope ass ideas, they're a normal person. And they're a person who wants, you know, who just like has normal values.
It's but, so, it's so crazy. I just want to interject for a second, Jeff. In college, I was a part of this class. We had to do this research project, it was a film business course, and how do you get a film made from, you know, the pre-production all the way to ancillary rights. And so, you know, it was our job to get budgets. And this is at a time when like phone books were a thing, right? So I called Neil Moritz, you know, Fast and Furious.
Oh, yeah. The producer of all the Fast and Furious movies.
And I left him a message on his answer machine, and he called my college house. And one of my roommates is like, Neil's on the phone. And I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know anyone named Neil. And Neil Moritz, because I left a message that was interesting enough that I reached out to him directly, he said, here's the name of every producer on my film, associate producer, executive, whoever. They'll give you the budget. And I took an actual film budget for the original Fast and Furious into my class just because I had something to say, because I reached out directly, and because he's a human being.
Yeah, and if you just talk to them like they're a regular, like all these people are regular people. It's like, you know, and it's interesting because, like, you know, one of the things that when I was in L.A., there's this agent that I know who I'm not a huge fan of, but, like, he has access to sort of these incredibly powerful people, like, including, like, Warren Buffett, who's, like, a personal hero of mine. And I was like, it's like, why is Warren Buffett hanging out with this, like, agent? And someone's just like, honestly, Warren Buffett just wants to be around famous people. And it's so interesting that, like, Warren Buffett, arguably the smartest, you know, sort of clearly the most successful man of like a certain generation, he's one of the richest people in the world, ultimately he's just like, yeah, kind of want to be around famous people. Like, that's such an interesting thing. Like, the idea that you have this person that I would have, like, I read a fucking 1100 page book about Warren Buffett's life, about how he came up from nothing, how he's raised his family, how he's had all these different successes and challenges, whatever. And ultimately at the end of the day, he's just like, yeah, man, it's kind of dope to go to dinner with Kate Hudson. You know, it's like that, but like, that's like a very real, like, it's a very human reaction. And when you think about it that way, once you sort of like take people off pedestals, and not in a way where you're like condescending towards them, but more in a way where it's like, it brings you closer to them, it should A, empower you to sort of be like, fuck, man, if I have a good idea, like, I can kind of hustle and make something happen. But then B, it sort of hopefully allows you to feel more like, you know, empowered to sort of pursue things that you feel really strongly about. And obviously, like, you should be self-aware, and you should be like, listen, like, not every idea you have is great, and not every whatever, you know, it's like, not everything that you try to do will be successful necessarily. But I think it's interesting to think that, like, success and like accomplishing things is actually more within your grasp than you would have thought. And I, you know, that to me is like one of those things, like the humanization of everything. And when you think, when you break things down, it's like people being people. And that, like, you know, and again, like, if you can't get the first guy, you might not even be able to get the second guy. But I bet there's, like, a third guy who no one ever emails for anything. And he's 100% happy to, like, talk to you and, like, you know, become, you know, become accessible to you. So, I mean, again, it's, like, not about, like, infiltrating these rooms or, like, getting in these circles or anything like that. But more just sort of, like, if you have something to say, and you think there's people that can help you accomplish those things, and that and if that thing can be helpful for the other person, right? Because it's ultimately, like, if it's like, oh man, I just like really want to be in Kanye's entourage, that's stupid. Right. But if you have an idea where you think he could be a platform, it's interesting that you could go in through these third or fourth guys, and they could take an idea to Kanye, because ultimately it makes them look dope if they bring a good idea to him. So it's like, you know, I think that's one of the things that the internet's really allowed us to do, where it's like, you have accessibility. I guess even before the internet, because your Neil Moritz story, it's like, you know.
I mean, for anyone out there who wants to you know, get an idea to Kanye, like, I think too, like, become your own Kanye, you know, like be your own sort of like.
Well, that's the other thing where today it's like we're at a time where it's like everyone can sort of like amass a certain size of audience. It's like there is a difference between like, I think, like a Kanye audience and an Uzi Vert audience and, you know, whatever. It's like, I mean, I think you see when you look at people like Cuddy's like a really good example, right? Cuddy like clearly has maximized his fan base, but it's probably not going to get bigger than it is right now. It's like he has probably 150,000 people who will definitely spend $20 every time he has an album cut, or maybe even more because they buy ticket sales too, but like that they'll definitely buy his album. And that's why you see him make those significant, like those same album sales numbers that are pretty impressive mm-hmm. every single album, even though he hasn't done anything necessarily in a mainstream way since Day and Night and things like that. And I think we're at a time now where it's like you can amass an audience, right? But it's just a matter of like, I think going back to like tying it into the other thing, it's like, just do both. Like, always, like, work hard. Always do shit like that. And then always just, like, think about things in a very practical way. Like, don't ever think, like, you can't do something. You might not... The thing you want to do might not be as successful as you want it to be. But you always have a chance to do it. So you shouldn't cut it off before you start. You know? Which I think is just... It's an interesting thing to think about. And just, like, I think... I keep saying it. But, like, just all these people are just people. You know? They have, like... They're not that different from you. Their decision-making processes aren't that different from you.
Is there any short way to describe owning your own ideas and how important that is?
I think people are always afraid that their ideas are going to get stolen and stuff like that. And I think people are less shitty than people think, especially on that level, right? There might be like a small dude might steal your idea. And who knows, maybe the third or fourth guy in the circle that you want to get into will steal your idea. But fuck, man, like, you know, if you had one good idea, you'll have another one. And, you know, it's like if that's like being too precious with yourself and being too like whatever. Also not being willing to just be like humble and be like sort of, you know, be willing to sort of like be like, hey, you know, I don't know much, but this is a humble attempt at whatever. Like that's always, you know, yeah, I think you just always have to go in with confidence and also with a self-awareness of like what the reality of your situation is.
What was the original vision for Grantland?
I mean, the original vision is what it was. It's like build an orbit around Bill, make something really good, have really good content, really
bring
good
in Rembert and
yeah.
Well, wait, but were there any lines drawn in terms of like how ESPN would be involved or not involved?
We were really good with ESPN. I mean, the guy who's the now CEO, president of ESPN, this guy John Skipper, who was really close with Bill and who. Like I had to interview with like to get my job. Like I had to interview with like four different suits to get my job, and John was the like the final boss, and he was like the easiest one. He was like the dopest dude. He's like this great Southern guy who's like so smart and so well read, and just like, and we just talked about media the entire time, media and sports. And I was like, oh, I can talk about these things. But John was great. John Walsh was there at the time, who's sort of like his deputy as when it comes to content and stuff like that. And John Walsh like. Essentially made SportsCenter the thing it was at its peak of SportsCenter.
Right.
And those guys were great. Connor was involved. He was great. Him and Bill were really close. And then the other executives were all sort of supportive because their boss was into it. And so they were like really helpful to us. And, you know, that was like a slightly weird dynamic at ESPN because like we would get like sort of like preferential treatment where it's like we'd be allowed to do whatever we wanted and it wouldn't be whatever. Like I remember my first meeting in Bristol. I had like 80% of the people were so nice and 20% of the people were like dicks because they're like, fuck you, man. Like, because I was just sort of like really positive. I was like, oh, well, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And they're like, and these are people who are like, have been like in a corporate system that sometimes doesn't afford them to do things that are really interesting, which I get and I'm sympathetic to. I don't think you should be rude to me because of that. But like I understood it at the time.
And you knew that you had to move to Los Angeles.
Yeah. And I was like, ready. Like I'd lived in New York for like 6 or 7 years at that point. And or I guess 6 years. And I was sort of like, I've been thinking about it. And like, I was like, oh, yeah, why not? And so I moved to LA.
How are LA rap shows different than New York rap shows?
I mean, I stopped going to rap shows. I mean, is that a joke question?
No, I don't remember if you went to things or not. I remember
I went to things that like, I said, my taste, I guess I was a little more into rap at the time where I was like, I knew about Wale before, like when he was like doing go-go shit and stuff like that. But then like, right. I think I stopped being like I got old and like I stopped being that stuff. So like LA, I don't think I ever went to a rap show in LA except for like Yeezus and right. Watch the Throne, like that. Those are the only ones.
But
I
what did you do in LA besides drive a lot and like?
I don't know. I just like hung out with comedy writers and ate a lot of Korean food. And honestly, like I mean, the LA and New York. You guys, we've talked about LA and New York a lot because there was a time when you guys were even thinking about going out there. And you know, I I think LA is a really cool city to visit, and I think it's great to live there if you work in entertainment or if you're sort of like settled down with your life and stuff like that. But it's not a place to like really grind.
No.
And I think that combined with the ESPN job was one that was so like sort of it was like very cushy. It was like very easy in the sense that it's like you have like the largest media organization of all time like allowing you to do all the stuff you want to do, and you can sort of be like, well, I want to do this, and if you give them a good reason, they were sort of like very amenable to that.
When did you realize that Bill was not long for ESPN?
I don't think any of us saw it coming like that. I mean, he says he saw it coming now, but like I think, you know, I mean, I knew I wasn't long for ESPN because at some point, like, so I'd started another website over there called 538, where we
recruited. Oh, yeah. Can you talk about that real quick? Like,
I mean, there's nothing to talk about. Like, Nate Silver, who was this guy at the time who had predicted the election in 2008.
For the New York Times.
For the New York Times. We sort of were like, oh, what if we got this dude? And what if we, like, built? So essentially, what if we made the all? It was like, we build different verticals within ESPN and, like, sort of back them and, like, sort of fund them in an interesting way. And so we, like, identified actually two other websites that we wanted to buy that we ended up not doing.
But
can you talk about those or no?
No.
But to get him.
Oh, yeah, actually, one I can because one closed. I wanted to buy Lucky Peach, which was Dave Chang's thing at the time. And then the other one, I don't remember what it was, but there were four.
But to get 538, to get Nate Silver, you had to fight off the New York Times.
Yeah, that was weird. It was the New York Times and I think the Wall Street Journal, or maybe it was the Washington Post. I forget who else it was, but I was like, there were three lines of communication into Nate. One was sort of the friend line, which was Bill, because Bill had like was a fan of Nate's, and
he'd been on the podcast.
Yeah, it's like sort of celebrity friend shit. The other one was the executive tip, which was Skipper, which John is sort of like a very charismatic dude who just is like, I'm a boss, come here, do boss things. And then I was supposed to sort of be the young person to be like, here's a vision for what you can be, and here's how we'll support it, and here's the things we do. And so we just like go out to dinner, get drunk, and like talk about the internet and talk about what he could do for a while and like and things like that. And like I remember, like I would write, like it's pretty crazy, like I have these like recaps that I would write like super hungover the next morning, be like, here's what we talked about, here's what it was, here's what I think the deal point should be, and blah blah blah. And so then that's
to send to Bristol.
I would send it to Skipper, my immediate boss, Bill, and then I think one other person. But so I was sort of like, this is what I think this could be. And then we started, like, we're like, we're going to double down this, where we'd have like 30 for 30 would be part of it. And like, we're like going to make this a consortium and all this stuff. And then at some point, like, I think, you know, different executives sort of like got like, were just like mad at us and whatever. And then my life just became harder because it was like the executives and I didn't get along. I was like, all right, well, this might have run its course. And that's where sort of like the more recent shit that I've been doing has like become more of a thing.
Well, I just have one more ESPN question. I don't know. Yeah.
I was going to ask if ESPN has done right by 538.
I think so. I think they treat them pretty well. I think 538 did a great job with the election. They have a really popular podcast.
I think it's weird that people have turned on Nate Silver the way they have, because I think that everybody wants like 100% certainty of like,
well,
how the election's going to go.
I mean, so he's never like, this is 100% what will happen. He's always like, this is the percentage chance of this thing occurring. And
yeah,
it's like, you know, it's like, it's just a matter of people want it to be very binary, but it's like not. It's like, you know, he's always like, this, there's like all these grays and stuff like that.
Right.
And
people don't understand, like, when it says there's a 20% of something happening,
it's 1 in 5 chances that that will happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things where it's like, also, I mean, I think obviously the election season and all that stuff is very fraught with a lot of emotion in general.
Right.
You know, like, so I think you combine that with this dude who you believe. Like, I mean, I remember I talked to like the Obama bros like the day before. I was like, listen, like, how worried should we be? They're like, we got this in the bag. The day, like, they told me about like voter file data. That's like all this stuff where it's like they have all the information on all the voters of the last like whatever elections. They know exactly who they are, so they know exactly who they need to get to make sure this is fine. And they've gotten all those people. Like, it's all good. Blah 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 blah. Like, I remember I was at the viewing party I was at, and like we were talking about that. I was like, Obama bro said it was fine. Like, it'll be fine. And like and then obviously what happened. I was like, and then I like walked out of a restaurant in the West Village, and I was like in a daze, and I was like, I didn't know how to walk back. I was like lost, and I was like I just had to like get in, like I couldn't even get a cab because I like couldn't figure out which direction to face, because I was like, this is fucking horrible.
It was horrifying.
Yeah. What was your ESPN question?
What 30 for 30s did not get made that you thought would get made?
There's a couple. I don't want to say, because Bill might still make documentaries.
But so. Can you talk about seeing the OJ documentary while it was in the edits?
I don't think I even saw edits of it. Like, I think I saw footage. Like, mm-hmm. I remember the day they got Furman was, like, big. They're like, we got Furman.
Sure.
To talk, which is huge. Because he hadn't talked, I don't think, publicly about any of this stuff since then. And, like, I just remember, like, I mean, you sort of, like, when you hear the premise of what's getting made and then you see the people who are doing it, you're like, oh, this is going to be a fucking monster. it's like the Watch the Throne of documentaries. It's like, oh, OJ, ESPN, and Ezra, who's, like, clearly a great director and the executive, the producing team at ESPN. It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, this will be big.
Okay, so then you moved back to New York.
No, I still lived in LA for like a year after
Yeah.
And I was like, just going
back.
You bought
your apartment.
Yeah, and then I was going back and forth like every week too.
Sure.
No, I think so. I told Bill that I was going to leave ESPN like maybe like 5 months before I did, and I was like, listen, man, like I want to figure out what I want to do. I don't know what it is yet, but I don't want to lose my salary. So can I like do a bunch of shit? And sort of like check out and be okay. And he was like okay with it, because that was after the suspension and after all that stuff. Yeah. So he was sort of like, fuck it.
Also, what a office lifestyle you had. Like, because we never got to visit you in your office there, but to our knowledge,
because Cho wouldn't let us.
No.
Is that true?
Sort of. You were like, there's nothing there. There's nothing.
No, it was literally a boring office, and also not everyone came in.
But you got to play your music, right? You got to.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, I worked
alongside Sean Fantasy, and
yeah, and, I remember I knew of Sean, and then he was friends with a lot of the people, and then I did an interview and talked with them for a while before he came. And yeah, I mean, Sean's the best.
Well, let's talk about some Grantland employees. What are your?
You got all of them on the fucking podcast.
Yeah, well,
me.
You know.
Shay Rembert,
yeah.
I think, did you guys have Sean?
No, because Sean's in LA. But, what was your first interaction with Shay?
I didn't interact with Shay until towards the end. I mean, I knew of him, and, like, I didn't do his deal, though. Like, I did more of the sports people's deals. So I did, like, Zach's and Barnwell's and stuff like that. I didn't do Barnwell's. I did Zach's and then a few people like that. But I just remember being like, holy fuck, this dude's a good writer. And this is before Shoot Your Shot and the fucking FOH Army and shit like that.
Yeah.
And then Shay came to the office and was like, whoa, this dude's like chill as fuck. And he's also so different from a vibe perspective of anyone else that we had. And like I wouldn't be smart enough to say, oh, I knew that this would happen. But like, and then when his book was coming out, we were like talking about like sort of his book and like he was explaining what he does. I mean, the thing about Shay is, and you guys know this because you know him, is like he's just the best dude. Mm-hmm. He's like both simultaneously the most sincere and earnest and like just best character person of all time, but he's also like a fucking really good writer. He just like writes in a way that's conversational and interesting and engaging, and he knows, he like has a good sense of, he articulates things that no one else is really articulating in the way that he does it. You know, the first, like, I remember the week that he wrote something about Fresh Prince, and then also something about his dad, I think, or no, explained to his kids about what it meant for them to be half black, half Mexican. It was fucking amazing. And then the next day he wrote something about the Fresh Prince in like Carlton or some shit. I was like, fuck, this guy is
both
range.
Equally as important. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And it's just like, he just does a really, I mean, he's super, super talented. And that's why he continues to sell a shitload of books.
And he's sincere and authentic, and that matters.
And that translates to people where like, he's sort of like, in some ways, like he's the best version of what, of something that I think is really important, where it's like you build an audience and then you figure out a way to continuously talk to them and give them things that are relevant to them in a really interesting way. And yeah, I mean, Shay's the fucking best dude, and I wish him nothing but the best.
That whole Grantland experience, it's hard to recreate that because there were so many good people around, right?
I mean, it's also just a different time. It's like we're at a time where like people don't need more websites. Like we're not like, we weren't at like content overload the way we are today when Grantland started. Like I remember like we would have like long articles and people would be like, what the fuck is this? Like, no one wants that. They're like, paginate that. It was like, we were like, paginate these long articles. And we're like, no. It's like, that's annoying. But like, I mean, I think, and if you like go back to look at the archives, like the first day of Grantland, like there are like 15 people were like, this is going to fucking implode. And that was the thing when like everyone was like, oh, Grantland like was unsuccessful and all this. Just like, listen, I manage our P&L. We did very well. And it's like, we did as well as we needed to for ESPN to be happy with us, which is sort of our goal. It's like, we didn't have to, you know, it's like, I focused on as much money as they told me to hit for the year. And then besides that, we focused on making dope shit.
Do you have any opinions on at the end, Bill had said that the resources weren't there, that he wasn't able to hire the amount of people that he wanted, and the placements weren't there on ESPN.com.
I mean, I think it's just super complicated, right? Like, it's just relationships and shit like that. And I think it just got to a place where the vision that they had for it, the vision he had for it, the vision that some other people had for it, is like, I don't think they were completely aligned. And, like, you know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, in some level, like, he'd been with them for a long time. And I think there are new things that you always want to try. And I think that's always interesting. And I think good news is like, everyone seems to be happy where they're at right now, which I think is important. And, you know, like, I love Skipper and I love a bunch of ESPN people a lot. And there are people at ESPN that I think are fucking shitty. And I think that, you know, I'm surprised they still have their jobs. And, you know, so it is what it is.
Name them. Name every single one of them.
Jeff Rosenthal.
I don't work for ESPN.
Yeah. But if you did, I would want you to get fucked. No, I would never want that for you.
Thank you.
What is your involvement today with The Ringer?
Friend of The Ringer. I mean,
reader of The Ringer.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to them. There are certain things that I've like sort of tangentially like given my opinion on, but they know what they're doing. I mean, they have like a shitload of people that I think are so smart, and like Bill's obviously very smart, and Sean and Chris and those people are. I mean, they know what they're doing. So, you know, I think it's sort of just like, it'll be interesting to see what like all websites do right now. We're at a time where content monetization and things like that are at an all-time low. It's like, if you start a website now, you're fucked. You know, it's like, there are places that start things like The Outline and Josh Chaplowski or whatever, however you say his name, started their website, and it's like, it's going to be a challenge. Like, no one wants websites. Like, that's one of the things, like, the one thing that I'm so, it's so crazy about is like, when people like focus on the homepage of their website and what it looks like, it's like, no one gives a shit about your homepage. Mm-hmm. They're going to get to your story through Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and once they get there, they're going to look at that story, and if your story page isn't dope, then you're fucked.
Right.
But like, no one's going to your, like, it's like there's five people going to your homepage, fam. Like, you right. don't worry about that anymore. Like, your story page should be your homepage, because that's where people are going. That's their new home. And so I think it's like, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what all people do with websites and stuff like that.
Do you think that people even, I mean, I remember like, you know, 2 years ago, people were saying that people have stopped reading on the internet. Do you think that's true?
No, because I mean, people consume content. You know, I think reading, words will always exist on the internet. That'll happen. I think there's just a shitload of content now, and there's like, you know, it's as interesting to read tweets as it is to read stories, as it is to see pictures on Instagram or watch things on Snapchat or, you know, fucking iMessage with your friends. Like, there's like a gajillion things you can do now, and there's like a competing economy for attention. It's just sort of like, how do you navigate through that, I think is the biggest challenge. And how do you get mindshare in that? And then you see shit like with the fucking Kendall Jenner Pepsi thing, where it's like brands have to get in that mix too. And like, how do they do that? And what does that look like?
I wanted to get to this because this is very important. You had a tweet thread recently that was too much for 140 characters. God. And I guess this comes from your most recent trip to Los Angeles. Is that right?
Yeah. So we haven't talked about this really. So
no, yeah.
So like in this studio time with Justin, you start... You can't tell by now, and no one's listening at this point, so it doesn't matter, but like but like, obviously, like, I think people are dope, and some people that I think are dope tend to be black people who work in the rap industry, and I'm like, oh, a lot of these people are fucking dope. And and so like, I keep meeting all these like dope black people, and I'm like, oh shit, like, and we meet each other, and like, I'm with other white people, so like, I see them give like these like white dudes like who are like suits or whatever, like standard white person handshakes. It's like the traditional handshake that your grandpa gives another grandpa. It's like, yeah. And then I see them come to me, and we're like, fam. And we do the thing where it's like a more
like Obama
urban,
yeah,
a more, exactly, yeah, like the, yeah, Obama thing. It's like, yeah, a more urban handshake, you know, you bring it, it's like a whole thing, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so then at one point I was like talking to people, and like I'd been set up on my patio working, and I was on the phone, and then, and I didn't even realize this was him at the time, but Danger comes up to me.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, what's going on, man? It's good to meet you. And he gave me a white person handshake. And like, he went in with the white person. I was like, oh, fuck. It's like, am like, I fucking lame, yeah, as right, fuck now? And I was, and like, I didn't
he's
even know.
He's determined you to be.
Yeah. And it's like, and I was like, oh, I was like, fuck. I need to, do I not? I was like, I don't look cool. Like, what failures? Like, it was like, I saw my entire life flash before my eyes, like all the lame ass shit that I've ever done. Like, this has led me to this moment where I no longer have the respect of a class of human beings, like the creative class of black rap,
right,
dudes who are just dope as fuck, who I want their admirations. It was like, it took me back to that room with Kanye, where it was like, Kanye was like, yo.
Right, yo, you're tainted. Yeah, you're...
I know, it sucks.
I feel like sometimes I go in, because I feel like a lot of guys.
I force it sometimes too.
A lot of guys expect me to do the white guy handshake, so I do the white guy handshake.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Oh no, I always like go for like something that.
There is that moment where sometimes you kind of think they want to give you a white guy handshake, and you sort of force in. You angle your hand in the direction where it's like, nope, we're doing this, fam.
I'll tell you this: Miss Info had a karaoke birthday party. You were there. Right,
oh, that one that I stopped by at.
I think
the one that you were not invited to. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know Minnie.
Years
at the
time. And years and years ago. Now you know her.
Yeah. But Jeff really got a. Jeff really enjoyed shitting on me in that moment. The glee of his smile was like, "You didn't know her. You weren't invited to that." It was dark.
Please, so, you were invited to everything else.
So what? You know, 9 years ago, 8 years ago, something.
No, it was less than that. But yeah, I wasn't invited.
And,
but I went.
And Ebro, who we didn't know very well, but I guess we knew him enough that when he saw us, he gave us what we, you know, call the black man handshake,
yeah,
which really we learned was more of a Spanish thing. It's more of like a Puerto Rican thing
where you slap hands and then you go hug. In for like a hug.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not a
classic black
like,
appropriation culture of the Spanish. No.
But it's just it's the slap of the hand and then you pull back for a full hug. It's
oh,
not like,
yeah, yeah.
It's
yeah.
not like you like grab and then pull.
Yeah, that's like a true friendship thing, though, because like if you're hugging people, you're not hugging people you don't know.
Right. This is the slap and the hug.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were like, oh.
I do that with Jeff sometimes.
We were welcomed in.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, yeah.
We thought, like, you know, like
you're in the fam.
We were brought in, and thus we
you're
can.
Like, we're
going
to be on the morning
moving
show
forward.
Now.
Yeah, and moving forward, we could do that,
right?
Like, you know, to people that we meet, yeah. Right? So we were like allowed. We were in the circle now. You feel like you have.
I've been kicked out of the circle. Like, listen, everyone who's had that dejection of getting the white guy handshake when you don't want it at all remembers every time they've gotten the white guy handshake.
Well, yeah. What'd you do with Pharrell?
Pharrell, it was like normal black guy. Yeah. like we were just like, yeah.
Does Pharrell have a big team with him?
Yeah, Pharrell's a squad. But like he has a lot of shit going on.
What's it's a squad, right. though? Like, are we talking about like double
managers,
digits of people?
No, not like that. But he's like, I mean, he
like,
has a lot.
Miko's brought over, what, like 12 people to
yeah,
our
but
apartment?
What I want
to
know is like.
But no, Pharrell's not superfluous. He has people on his team that do shit.
No.
And
no,
they're
hey,
all
totally,
there.
Everybody
totally,
at the Miko's brought over is necessary.
No, I totally get that like every person has something to do.
Like a professional job that's
right.
part of the Pharrell right. enterprise.
Yeah. But how do they get there?
What do you mean?
How do they, like, if
yeah,
everyone's coming
you,
to the studio.
All,
I think multiple Ubers, I think. Although, I remember
multiple
one.
Multiple Ubers.
I think, yeah, because I remember one day that, because I, oh, I didn't tell you this.
What's up?
So, the last day I was there, and I'm like, I haven't slept at all, because we're at the studio super late every night, and I wasn't sleeping well at the time. So, Pharrell had triplets, and so he leaves earlier in the day, like, you know, whatever. And so it was like later on in the day, and someone was working in the place that I normally post up and work. Because a lot of like studio time is like downtime while they're like writing and stuff like that.
Sure.
You don't want to bother that shit. And so I was like, oh, I'll go to the other patio where Pharrell's team always squads up because
he's at
because
home.
Yeah, they're gone. They're like, I was like, oh, I checked. They're like, oh, no one's there. I was like, cool. This is what I'll just do. It's like nice.
Yeah.
So I post up there and then they come back because they went to leave for an offsite meeting. And they're just like, we're coming back. And so then I'm sitting at the far end of this patio thing and there's no other entrance out. And then they're all like, they come in and they take over the entire section. And they're like, just talking about Pharrell shit. And I was like, guys, I can go. And they're like, no, stay. So at this point, if I leave, it makes me look like an asshole. Cause I'm
right,
like, you know,
right.
So I'm just sitting there fucking awkwardly. And then like kind of chiming in on shit. And then, or they're not even chiming in on shit. It's like sitting there like chuckling to myself when they all say something funny.
Yeah.
Like that was the day the Kendrick video, the Humble had come
Humble,
out.
Yeah.
And there's like, that's dope. And I was like, yeah, that is dope to myself. And
you watch Crashing?
No, not yet.
Oh, it's so good.
No, I love Pete. I haven't. I'll watch it. But then Pharrell at one point. So Pharrell and I meet by talking about the Mike Brown thing.
Right.
And then that was the same day. Mike Flynn was like, "I'll talk with
immunity,"
and he's like, "Did you guys see that?" And then no one said anything. I was like, "I saw that." So then we start talking about like woke ass shit for a minute. And it's like, so at this point, like me and Pharrell only talk about like Pharrell or woke shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And and I was like, but I was stuck in that fucking back corner while they're all just doing their shit. And I was like, what do I got?
But now Pharrell knows you as that guy.
A woke guy.
Yeah. Like somebody who actually reads books.
Yeah. Or at least definitely reads Twitter.
That's
yeah.
right. Next up, just make sure that you always bring up the chill ass dentist with Kanye. Oh,
God. Does Pharrell read Twitter?
I don't know. Pharrell's very well read. He's so thoughtful. He's
Does he
so...
want a website in 2017?
I don't. I mean,
Does Justin read Twitter?
Yeah, Justin's on Twitter. You can see his tweets.
I don't know. I don't follow him.
Maybe you should, fam. Why not?
Is that your job?
Yeah, my job is to tell people one by one to follow Justin on Twitter. It's very efficient. Anyone listening to this podcast, you should follow Justin Timberlake on Twitter. I think it's at Justin Timberlake.
Oh, I think it's at J Timberlake, actually.
Is it?
I think so.
Yeah, why you should follow him.
I follow. I looked at it this morning.
Does he follow you back?
No.
Ah.
I don't.
That's really when you actually
listen, hate it.
I think I, yeah, I mean.
Do you subscribe to that?
Yes, 100%. I can't wait for that day.
Actually, wait, so there are people who have confused you for the other David show, the artist.
Yeah, that happened when we were, like, so I was going to dinner with our friends, and we both showed up because.
Whoa.
Yeah, do you not know that happened?
No.
So, I think we do. Chang had dinner, yeah. And we're like, oh, we're going to get dinner. It was like when I lived in LA. He's like, yo, chosen town, we're all getting dinner. Do you want to come? And Chang was like, oh, yeah, for sure. And then he thought it meant his best friend, David Cho. And, like, right. We're friendly.
Yeah.
And I guess we're closer friends now. But, like, at the time, we're, like, acquaintances and friendly and stuff like that. Like, we were, like, follow each other on Instagram, friendly, but not like everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and so then we show up to dinner, and it's, like, there's not enough seats. And it was at this, like, very, like, at the time, this sushi restaurant that just opened. And I was, like, oh, this is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And it was, like, oh. But so then, but I also had to, like, when other David Cho got big on Twitter, I had to, like,
say that you're not David Cho.
Yeah, because, like, I get some of his, like, and also, like, the people who follow David Cho are, like, very weird.
Without giving away your email address, can you talk about when you tried to negotiate with someone else for their
email address? I don't care about you can get my email address anywhere, but, like, when I tried to buy davidcho@gmail.com, and, like, I was like, listen, like, this was in 2007, and I was like, listen, man, I knew about, like, because I remember I had a friend who worked at Google in 2003 when I was in college. I was a sophomore in college, and my friend was like, listen, you should get this Gmail thing. It's going to be great. We're making this email service. Like, I'll get you an invite, because at the time it was invite only.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll take the invite, but I think I'm going to be using my alumni.wfu.edu address moving forward. And I was like, so I didn't set it up. And then, I was like, and then everyone gets on the Gmail train. I'm like, fuck, I need to get this. And David Cho's taken. And so I had to email the guy. I was like, listen, can I, like, I really want this email address. Like, and this is, like, it's not been around that long. So he doesn't have, like, this, like, today it'd be impossible. Like, mm-hmm. Back then I was like, in my brain, I was like, I'm willing to pay in the thousands of dollars to have this because I want this moving forward. Like, I've made this mistake. I don't want to go down this road again. And he's like, at first he's like, hey, man. I was like, you know, can I buy this? He's like, hey, man, you know, let me think about it. You know, I'll think about if I want to do it or not. And then he signs his email, Dave. And I was like, fuck you, man. And it's just one of those things where, and then he was like, he ended up saying no. But it's like, that's just, like, rude. Like, sign your email, David. Yeah, just, like, don't fucking be a dick. And I was like, why the fuck? And he's like, oh, God.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, if people want to listen to more of these episodes of A Waste of Time with It's the Real, where can they go?
You can always go to soundcloud.com/A Waste of Time. You can also go to iTunes, search for A Waste of Time with It's the Real. We have episodes with everybody from Angie Martinez to Wyclef, Mac Miller, Just Blaze, Mano, Lil Uzi Vert, Charlie Wilson, and many more.
A lot of episodes. Listen, guys, leave comments. Leave ratings.
And don't leave us.
Go to SoundCloud, go to iTunes, and make it your mission to leave something positive there. If it's a rating, if it's a comment, whatever it is, we appreciate it. Subscribe all around the internet. Also, Jeff, people are looking for more places with content. Where can they go?
You can always go to Twitter. We are It's The Real. Facebook at It's The Real. Instagram at It's The Real. On Snapchat, which we don't really use anymore because Instagram is eating its lunch.
That's right.
We are It's The Real on Snapchat and It's The Real Eric on Snapchat. It's The Real was taken, so fuck whoever took that. We are coming to get you, and we will stab you through the neck.
Here's your biggest homework assignment right now. Go to Spotify. Look up It's The Real and subscribe to us on there, or follow, or whatever the jargon is on Spotify. Make sure that you are following It's The Real, ItsTheReal.
You can listen to all of our podcasts on your mobile app.
Yes. Oh, that too, by the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jeff, this podcast will not grow if we don't get people to tell other people to listen to A Waste of Time with It's The Real. and it all starts with us. So, do you have somebody you would like to shout out right now?
I do. There's been a bunch of people who have commented on SoundCloud and on iTunes and stuff, mm-hmm. but I want to shout out somebody that that just liked a picture on Instagram.
Okay.
I want to shout out Lance Drummonds, who I haven't seen in a little while.
Shout out to Lance Drummonds.
Good guy, good musician. Just like a really solid dude. So yeah. Shouts to him. Always good to hear from him.
Yeah, I would like to shout out Sammy Moneg, who is a regular commenter on SoundCloud. We so appreciate her comments and her listens, and we appreciate everybody for tuning in, subscribing, rating, commenting, all of that. Now for real, for real.
Now for real, for real.
We will see you guys next week.
Do we stop recording?
No. You said something funny, and that's when we started playing it.
Oh, wait. So you think
this is the end of the podcast already?
I think so.
You think it was with the Kanye thing?
I think the
No, when we brought back the Pharrell thing?
No, when you said...
Keep this in. This has to stay in now.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. When you said... when you said the Dave thing.
No, it's actually not. Oh, yeah. That's a good time.
That was a great...
But now this is like a good extra, so...
A little
maybe,
bonus.
Actually, you know what? Cut it out then.
Yeah.
Let's add this audio at the very end, like after it's done, after you do your outros.
Sure.
And we'll just save it as like a fucking, like, this will be our, what's that song at the end of Blueprint? Where it's like after like three and a half minutes of nothing, it comes in. Because this podcast is the blueprint of all podcasts. It's the best version of any of it.
That is right. David?
Wait, do we hit all our notes?
Unless you have anything else you
want. Was there anything else we got to talk about? We didn't talk about how
talking about this for so long that
we didn't talk about how I will ask you guys questions on text that you then take to the real. Jeff wants to say, yeah, you ask us things on text that you can just Google yourself and find out.
Well, first of all, that's a Phil criticism that I have adopted.
I mean, it's just sort of like you guys know a lot about these things, and I like your takes on them. So it's like, you know, it's like, oh, does. You know, if I don't know, like, this Migos song or whatever, it's like, going to you guys, I will find a better answer than if I do whatever. And also, fuck you, you're not that busy to respond to a text to me.
The thing is, I'll respond, but it might take a month.
How do you guys think it went? Let's do a podcast wrap-up.
Oh, like a recap?
Yeah.
This
is going to be so funny for, again, the five people who've just, like, left their you know, podcasting on.
I thought it was good. I thought it was really good. I thought that it took... a weird arc. Like, it wasn't like the normal, like, this is the...
Because we beginning. Know each other so well.
I know, that's the thing.
It's right. Like, you can't be like, where did you grow up? What's it like? Da-da-da. It's like, we've had all that cover. Like, we've known each other for 10 years.
But what's weird is that we actually haven't talked about a lot of your beginnings. And even still on this podcast, we didn't.
It's not that interesting. It's like, I grew up. It's like, that's all it was. It's like...
Yeah, but all these things, like, and that's the thing with anybody that we have on the podcast, is that your beginnings shape your where you are now.
I mean, I'll say this as a person who's, like, fairly calculated about, like, how, like, I shape my narrative of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it is that. Like, I think there are things that are formative. I think I hit the things that are formative of, like, being an outsider in a place where, you know, it's like I guess we didn't talk about, like, how it's, like, a black middle school and a white high school, like, a white private high school, and how those things, like, shaped.
Right.
Like, the idea, like being around black people when you're 10 and 11 and 12. And then going to a rich white high school is like, that's one of those things that just like does affect you. And like going to a rich white high school is a very poor person.
Mm-hmm.
Also, and like those things that like I think are really good to build character. But I mean, you know, I think we hit the highlights.
No, I think we
highlights.
Hit all the important parts. I'm just saying that's like
the Kanye story, the chill things. Dentist story is way better than my middle school experience of like
which,
a black.
By the way, you never told us before.
What?
The Kanye story? Chill dentist.
Wait, we did.
No, we never talked about that.
Really?
Never knew that you were swimming there. Never knew.
Oh, I thought I called.
There's and also then, at a people. Point, people don't know that there's a lot that David doesn't tell us.
People always say that about me in general, though,
because
I'm not like that forthcoming with things necessarily. But I think I can't imagine I didn't tell you guys the Kanye thing just because it's so relevant to our relationship.
But there's also like a lot of stories that like you'll just be like I'm you know don't tell like you know certain people or don't.
Yeah, but I still tell you.
No.
Sometimes. But I feel like that you probably have those same sort of relationships with other people where it's like, well, don't tell anybody else about this.
No, I always took that. I took that Kanye story as like over the last year and a half or almost 2 years.
We'll be
that
on the
was
podcast?
A story David you, wanted to yeah. save it for the podcast.
Really?
Right, yes. Yeah.
No way. That story is literally from 2012.
I promise you, like, every time it's been held back for the podcast, like, I haven't told you that story, and then yeah. we're like, no, just save
that's
it for the
crazy.
Podcast.
Yeah,
because you've been so concerned about what you would tell on the podcast. You're like, well, what we talk about, guys?
But that's because, yeah. like, I mean, because it's a lot of it's like not my business to tell people other people's shit.
I get that.
You know?
I get that. But it's stories that you've like been through.
Yeah, it's very like Zelig-y. Ever seen Zelig?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I get the reference. I haven't seen the movie.
John Caramanica said that we
are hip-hop Zeligs.
Oh, really?
Yes. Uh-huh.
That's interesting. Wait, so what did you think of the Kanye story after you've heard it?
It's amazing.
It's funny, right?
It's a great story.
Oh, man. There's like
details. It's such a bummer, though.
There's details of it that I like. It's like, because he was like, he didn't make any sense. And it's like, the thing is like, he would say these things that, and it's sort of representative of Yeezus at the time, where it's like, he would say these things where the first 80% of it doesn't like up until the 80% point, it doesn't make any sense. And then at the 20%, the last 20%, he sort of makes it, ties it all together.
Right.
So instead of being like a narrative where you can just follow, it's like all these like free form like ideas. It's like he's painting a painting. It's like he's putting all the colors there, but he hasn't outlined anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so not until the very end when he like starts outlining it, does it actually make sense as far as like what the fuck is going on.
Right. It's almost like those Central Park artists who will like draw something and then they turn it upside down and it's like, well, that's what it is.
Yeah, and it was like, and I would ask questions at the 20% mark and the 40% mark and the 60% mark. Like,
right.
Yo, shut the fuck up, fam.
But in essence, it's like he's sort of like a stand-up comedian where he's just like, you have to wait
until...
Except
he's not that funny. I mean, no, stand-up comedians have jokes, though. They're linear jokes. It's like you talk about something.
But there's some people
there's a
who
big
tell
payoff
me.
At yeah. the end yeah, yeah, yeah. or whatever. Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think he's just in a weird place. Like, I think... He is just such a such a concentrated version of what an artist is, in the sense that he just is like all he cares about are the things he makes, and like whether that's the clothes or whether that's the music or whether that's even the story of what his narrative is and what his life is, like, he's so focused on what that is.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of like it consumes him. But I think the interesting thing about him is like the fact that like he's what 40 now.
About
close,
he's
yeah.
about to be 40,
yeah.
39 or 40.
Yeah,
like I think it's like a thing where it's like, well, he kind of isn't his barometer for cool isn't where it was before,
right?
Because he's a 40-year-old dude who lives in Calabasas now, rather than like a dude who lived even in New York, where it's like you're surrounded around people and all that stuff. It's like, I think one of the things that was interesting is like when you compare like Pastel, the clothing line he was gonna do,
yeah.
with Yeezy and like and all that stuff, it's like when you look at like, so they were gonna bring Pastel back last year with Ian Connor or whatever,
yeah.
and like you look at the pieces that he made in 2008 or whatever. Oh shit, we didn't talk about any of the Kanye shows, whatever.
We still can.
We didn't talk about that. We didn't talk about the Watch the Throne sessions.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's like, but I didn't know how much you wanted to reveal.
I would tell the one story about N-words in Paris where. Like Jay wanted to call it ball so hard. You can't put this in the tweet. Don't put this in the tweet. Like if people listen to this point, they can, but like how Jay wanted to call it ball so hard. And Kanye's like, no, we have to call it. We have to put the word N-word in the title. And they were going to name every, have I not told you the story?
No.
Like we were going to put the N-word in every single title of this album. So everyone has to say it and they have to confront it. So it'd be like, oh, this would be called like, you know,
wow,
whatever. And so like that was the statement. And Kanye, and I think the compromise, I'm assuming the compromise ended up being, all right, we'll put it in the title of this one song that's arguably the best song on the album,
right.
or second best song on the album for me, but Otis being number one. But
wow.
Yeah, but like that was like a thing. I mean, like that's just the relationship of like the mature relationship of whatever. But going back to the Yeezus versus Pastel thing, or Yeezy versus Pastel thing, I think like it's interesting in 2008, 2009, like Pastel is a clothing line that represented like sort of where fashion would be 4 years from then, 5 years from then. Like he was doing like these like varsity jackets and this sort of streetwear of things that I think is really interesting, really forward. And it like we can say with like looking back now, like this was very, very of its time. It's like, I mean, honestly, like, she was making shit that like Tom Brown makes today. It's like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now Yeezy, it's like not as advanced. It's not as cool. His like his barometer of what's cool isn't the same way it was, in the same way that probably like Bari or Rocky or those dudes have right now, just because they're youth and youth yields creativity and they're not super successful yet to the point where Kanye is now, where you can remove yourself from reality and they're like still part of the culture.
Well, okay.
You hear that in All Day, I think.
Yeah. Why do you think that Pharrell is
I was about to ask
in
that.
Tune.
Well, because I think, A, there are a few people.
Actually, we're not just in Tune. He sets the bar.
Yeah, he drives the culture.
I think there are a few people that maintain that level of, like, whatever, no matter what age they're at, right? You feel like Martin Scorsese is like that, where it's like, all right, he's old as fuck, and he's still making arguably his best movies.
Right.
But I don't think that Scorsese's cool.
No, but it's. I think it's, to me, it's just like, cool is creative, like, output, right? It's like, Kanye's creative output is cool. Like, comedians, you see it a lot. Like, there aren't that many great stand-ups who, like, once they become, like Jerry Seinfeld isn't as good stand-up as he was, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right.
Like, you know, and I think, why is Pharrell that? I think it's because Pharrell is sort of, has always been an alien. And while he's done things that are always cool, he hasn't necessarily started all the trends that Kanye started. Because you can't follow Pharrell. It's like, only so many people can wear white circle Chanel sunglasses and jean shorts and black Timberland boots and whatever. Oh, you know what a funny Justin and Pharrell story was, though? Like, the first time I was out there, I like, one morning, like, I was like late and I didn't shower or something like that, and I was like, fuck, like, I was like, when I don't shower, I wear a beanie or whatever, but it was like LA, so it was like 75 degrees or something like that, and I was like, fuck, I wonder if I can wear a beanie. And then I realized who I was going in the studio with, like Justin and Pharrell, who wear the craziest hats at all times.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is safe to wear a beanie. Wait, was there anything else we didn't talk about? It's the real waste of time after dark. I can't believe we're gonna keep this all in. It's gonna be dope. I can't believe we're gonna keep this all in. People are like, you guys talk for 2.5 hours?
Well, you have dinner in, what, like half an hour?
No, in an hour. We have plenty of time. I mean, we're not gonna talk for the next hour, but we do have plenty of time.
Game of Thrones?
No, that's not interesting. Was there any?
Well, you coming over and making your.
Oh, that? I talked about that on the Jeff so, and.
So on or the, on the Tall Tales?
Yeah.
When you rode up in an Uber.
Blasting the Game of Thrones. But then I walked into your apartment listening to it too.
Yeah. Game of Thrones. So that's soundtrack. Like a 45 minute trip with the Uber driver, and you were just playing the song.
Four songs, like, on so repeat, funny. But they all sound like one song. So it's, yeah, like you're just listening to the same motif over and over and over again.
I have a picture of you on the couch laid out because I sent it to Phil. I was like, you'll never believe what's happening right now.
So there's nothing else. I guess this is it. This is the end of this podcast. I don't want it to end because we've talked about doing it for so long.
Right? Well, no, but there could always be more. Like, this is
not really. I don't. Here's the thing about me doing this podcast, and the reason we haven't done it is because it kind of doesn't make sense.
No,
it makes sense now because of the Justin stuff, where it's like, okay, I'm tangentially involved in, like, well, no, your guys' industry.
That's not true. No, because we're
we're delaying it for a project I was working on that never ended up coming out. Oh, I didn't even talk about the Jimmy stuff. Iveen, we were in a meeting, like, so I was working with Jimmy Iveen on something, and I like stuff that never happened, right? Like, so it's like you work on a gajillion things, four of them happen, and so one of the meetings was with Jimmy, or the first time Jimmy was at his house, and we were in a meeting at a table, and he comes in as super Jimmy, and then he puts, like, I'm sitting next to him, and he puts his phone on the table, and he has, like, an iPhone, obviously. But then, like, I look over and it's like he has, like, one of those, like, dad iPhone cases where it's like the ones with the card holder in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the lamest shit of all time.
Yeah,
it's like it's the lamest shit of all time. But then the card that's on the very top is a black card, yeah. Which is like the best stunt of all time. Where it's just like, yo, I'm dad as fuck, but do you have that Centurion card? We didn't do the podcast because we were going to save it for when I had this one thing come out that would have been really great to promote.
Sure.
At the time, but that went away, which was annoying.
But here's the thing, David.
Yeah, I feel like, well, we're trying to not just do, and we've never.
I get that, but I don't want to. But it's like I don't want to be something that I want you guys to be successful. So I don't want to be someone that's irrelevant. I want you guys to, you know, we're talking about whether or not this will come out versus another person, like, in the next couple of weeks. And it's like, well, I don't want to put it, like, you know, I think it should come out just because it's, like, relevant.
Well, also, like, but for us, like, we're at the point now where I think our audience trusts whoever we put out, right? So there's going to be a good story coming out of it regardless of whether you're promoting something or not.
I do think if you're a dud, then at least they'll be back next week.
Well, I do think it's interesting that, like, this is probably the podcast you guys have done with someone who knows you guys as well as I know you guys. Like, I can't imagine anyone, like, even, like, you guys did Minion, Angie, and stuff like that,
yeah.
But they don't,
you know, it's like we.
I mean, Minya knows us fairly well, but like, no, she's not in the same level.
But she won't talk about it the same way either because of the
correct.
Because she has a very distinct personal and private, or like public and private life. Where right. It's like I have nothing. all I have is this.
But know? No, you've been probably our best friend for the past 10 years.
Aw, yeah,
yeah. No, you wouldn't
with
think
Eric
that?
No. For sure.
What's
yeah, I don't know about you, Jeff.
It's nice.
No, but
can we talk about how your birthday was at Angels and Kings?
Oh God, that's so that's the first and last birthday party I ever threw for myself because like I was like that was I guess I was 12.
Pete Wentz's
Wentz's bar.
I was not there.
No, I
you
was.
Were.
There.
Wait, you weren't there?
No,
you must have been out of town or something.
No,
when was it?
He Eric didn't know you.
Oh. Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 07. And by the way, no, here's something that people should know.
That's crazy.
A lot of you guys
I showed up alone.
A lot of when you guys first met and then you like would become like Gmail or GChat friends.
No, it was AIM and I thought that Dave was so annoying.
Because
he would just you know, on AIM all he would do was send me a milli for like
it was
hours.
Before the song came out, which was very prescient on my part.
No, it was like 2008.
I mean, okay, first of all, you're exaggerating because obviously I wouldn't do it for hours because I had a job.
Barely.
But like, no, I mean, I had a job. It might have been for like,
had a job.
Yeah, it might have been for like 45 minutes and not barely an hour is what you mean.
Yeah.
No, the Angels and Kings thing is like the thing I like about going to parties. The thing I hate about going to parties is like I don't like it when you can't leave when you want to.
Right.
I don't like having to talk to everyone.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, if you throw a birthday party, you have to stay to the end and you have to talk to everyone.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Oh, I'm never doing this ever, ever, ever again.
Yeah. I showed up by myself. I remember, I don't know who
that's
I even
so
talked
crazy
to.
That we didn't know each other, though.
No, we didn't. Yeah.
No. We met, I introduced Eric when we came through for Radar.
Yeah.
But even then, like, I mean, that must have been right after we became friends. We're probably barely. That was probably before a milli.
It was probably like 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff used to hate me.
No, I didn't hate you.
He just thought that like, I am.
Yeah. Getting these repeated things was just like.
You know what's crazy about that IM account is like so at the time Radar was like you would get traffic from a lot of places, so you'd like sort of become friends with other people who owned websites and ran websites. So you'd be like, oh, we have this story coming out. Like you should link to it. We'll link to whatever. And one of the people that I had on my IM. Was Andrew Breitbart, who at the time was running Drudge, and before Whoa. Breitbart, like he was just starting the Breitbart website, and like the Breitbart website, similar to Radar, it's like it wasn't like at the time it was just like sort of like you know him writing about shit they wanted with like a right slant, but
right.
Like, nothing like insane,
yeah.
So like Breitbart, which is his IM account, I think it's still active because it might be the company one.
Oh
or
my
like
god!
Like, I think I don't know about today, but like I think like 4 or 5 years ago, like I opened iChat one time just to see he was online. I was like, yeah. Holy shit! And he died too. So it's like,
yeah, right.
I was like, oh, this guy's online, and like it's like it's so weird though to think that like I was IMing with this dude who would then go on to arguably like destroy democracy in America.
That is so crazy.
Yeah,
that should be the headline.
What
for this podcast?
No, what do you think the headline for the podcast will be?
We don't have headlines,
but you have like the tweets, like you pull out stories for the tweets.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
Went from Tennessee to you know, one of the first hires at Kyle Schumer.
It's probably like, you know, we'll talk about like
Kanye
and Pharrell. Yeah. And
David Toto talks about what it's like to be yelled at by Kanye. To be woke with Pharrell. Don't put Pharrell in the headline though.
We also won't put woke.
Why not? God, you know how much I hate woke culture. That's why I hate that Pharrell associates me with woke culture. I want him to associate me with being dope.
Right.
Not with
exactly.
Wokeness.
Because
I think those two things are in direct opposition to each other now. I hate woke internet. Woke right. Internet's like it's become so annoying. Like that was the thing about Pepsi where I was just like, you know, this is bad. But, like, that was also the day, like, the Assad, like, Syrian thing happened, like, where it's, like, that was the day he, like, sarin gassed everyone.
Right.
And it's, like, I mean, the Pepsi commercial is bad, for sure. I mean, I guess yeah. I'm being, like, extra woke by, like, being hating on woke people. I was, like, but it's, like, this is a fucking commercial, and who cares?
Right.
You know,
right.
It's, like, there's other shit that's happening. Like,
yeah, right.
You know, like, the...
Yeah, I was surprised that it went as long as it did.
Well, I think it just, like, it hit people at different times.
Well, it took a whole bunch of things that people don't like and put them all together.
What? Kendall?
Kendall. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge
Pepsi.
Thing. Pepsi.
Or soda in general.
Right.
Woke culture.
Putting, like, a happy face on something that people.
The thing is, I really think there's a way to have done that interestingly. I like actually broke it down as like sort of, and like I've worked with them, and like I still will continue to work with the Pepsi people. So like, I mean, I would never be, like, it's like, I get how it happens. I get how it gets to that point. Sure. I get whatever. It's like, I also don't think it was the, I don't think it was the thing that was like, I don't think it's just like fucking like, you know, horror. It's like, they didn't put a fucking cross on someone's lawn and like light it up the way people are sort of making it sound like, you know, it's just sort of like, a lot of people made a decision. It kept happening. And, and it yielded a product that wasn't great, which is what happens sometimes. It's like, that's the thing. People don't realize that companies are people, you know, they're run by people. It's like, you know, and sometimes they're genius at companies, but the further you get away from that genius, the further you get away from the right person at the top.
Yep.
The more like, it's just like a regular person is just making a decision. Those people have jobs, they have families, they want to go home to their families. Their life is in their job, you know, and that's, you know, it's like, that's the way decision making works. And because you always want to think like, you know, like, oh, like people are like, oh, how did ESPN do that? Well, it's like, there's probably six people in the room or six people on the daisy chain of decision making that made this thing. And it might have been the fifth thing to come their way that day. And like, they kind of were like, yeah, why not? And like, and then a bad decision happens. It's like, it's not like ESPN, this like corporate, like monolithic organization is like out for evil. It's like, no, fucking they goofed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right.
It's like, and I think, you know, not everyone, it's like when you have companies that are thousands, if you have companies of tens of people, it's still like their mistakes still happen.
Wow, you're really apologizing for corporate culture, huh?
David, well, I don't think it's corporate culture. I think it's like human beings run shit.
Right.
And you have to understand that all companies are human, you know, and like all, like it's like you.
The Supreme Court notices.
Well, yeah. Okay, what'd you think when you were working for Grantland and Deadspin would shit on you guys just because they wanted to?
I mean, I think that's what they do and that's their job. And that like, you know, they only shit on us because it was. Because
you guys were popular.
No, I don't think that's true. I think they shit on us because we were part of ESPN. And because Bill's a polarizing figure. And Bill, I think at the time, would get them traffic. I think having stories about Bill would be successful for them. And that's why they would do it. And it's like, you know, you do things for business reasons. I was never like, oh, fuck those dudes. I was never like, I want to hang out with all of them all the time. But I was like, sort of like, fuck it, whatever. It's like, it did. Unless they posted things that were non-true and said they were true, that was the only time where I'd be like, oh, well, fuck this.
Right.
But, like, I mean, you know, like, one of the things that was crazy was when the Bill got fired by the New York Times, and this is, like, I will shit on individual people. I'll never shit on companies. But, like, this guy who wrote the story, Richard Sandomir, which I don't mind saying his name.
Because he's doing obituaries now.
Oh, is he?
Right?
Yeah, he's in charge of obituaries.
Well, that's dark, but whatever. This dude, he wrote the story, and he's
no, he's doing obituaries.
Okay. He's like, he was their sports media reporter, and ESPN had them in his pocket, or had him in their pocket, and so the Bill story comes out, and the week the Bill story came out, I'd actually put my resignation in that week too, sort of like unrelated, like I was like, this is happening, like it's a foregone conclusion, today's the day I'm gonna do it. And then I stopped working there, and then someone I talked to was like, they were like, what do you think about the Bill thing? It's like, oh, I quit, like I don't know. And they put that in a story, and they're like, whatever. So then the New York Times added that to the thing saying, like, unrelated, I had quit. And then my mom saw it, and she's like, oh, like that's which, you know, I quit obviously, but she was like, oh, like that's so funny. I went back to it, and then they changed it. Like they kept changing the language of it. Like they updated the story like four or five times because I saw it in different iterations. I was like, this motherfucker never called me, and he's saying I did certain things. That I like he was like, oh, like David Cho quit this way or like that way, or like all this shit. It's like, fuck, man. Like that's some shitty ass reporting. If you're the fucking New York Times and you think you have the presence of mind to change the story that many times, and also it's a story that got a lot of media attraction for them because it's the one where they fired Bill essentially, or they said they weren't renewing Bill's contract,
right?
And like, so it's like, I don't shit on the New York Times for that. I'm not like, oh, the New York Times fucking sucks, or the New York Times hates Bill Simmons. I'm
it
like,
was a
that dude
yeah
fucking sucks,
right?
And that dude is not a good reporter, and that, because if you're a reporter, you shouldn't be in the pocket of the things you're reporting on,
right?
You should sort of like look at them objectively and like, you know, blah blah blah, like that's the standard of the New York Times that you come to expect, and all that shit. And like like even like when the Times had that stuff with like Hillary, where it's like they made the Hillary email scandal like the 2 weeks before the election really big on the front cover. It's like,
right,
you know, was it objective? No, like it was probably reactionary because they thought they were being too nice to Hillary and too mean to Trump and like all that stuff. But it's like, again, human decision making and stuff like that, and you know, that's fine. But
and
like
here we are,
yeah. And so like I don't hate companies. What should we end it on? Do we have anything else? Do we have any stories that we meant to tell that we didn't? I feel like you didn't talk that much. You, Jeff, did not talk that much on this podcast. I feel like I talk too much.
But that's what we always do.
Yeah. But like, I feel like Eric and I talked a lot. But
once again, I don't think you talk too much. I think that I wanted to find out stuff about you, and we let you go.
Well, all right. Listen, David, we're so appreciative that you gave us the time.
Yeah, you're like, get off the podcast.
No,
this,
no.
I can't. The After Dark part of this, you have to... So,
I'll keep it.
Yeah, keep the thing, like, fade it out, and then bring it back.
Yeah, no, I will. Yeah. It's going to be great.
It's going to be so creepy for people. Like, why the fuck are they still talking? Did this end? Like, did this end? Are you going to run the music back, or is it going to stop now?
Right now?
The music
is I think it's just going to stop.
No, but, like, are we going to... The second ending, will it have the music, or is this going to stop?
No.
No, I don't think so.
All right.
I think it runs through the credits.
So, podcast listener, you don't know this, but we're going to record the intro now. So... We're going to keep talking.
You're really calling a lot of shots right now.
Well, we said we were doing that before, didn't we?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
so it's like, so essentially, we're going to stop talking to you, but we already ended the talking before, and the things you're hearing are from the fucking future. So, you know, food for thought. I don't know. Is that food for thought?
Yeah.
All right, cool podcast.
Thanks, David.